Senate will please come to order. Messages from the House.
February the 22nd, 2008, from the House of Representatives. Third reading, passed, amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 73, DUI penalties. Ayes 58, excused 2. House Bill 74, veterinarian loan repayment program. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. House Bill 92, Property Tax Refund Program, Ayes 58, excused 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
House bills on first reading and introduction. House Bill 43, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 43, Penalties for Domestic Violence, sponsored by Representative Berger, an act relating to crimes and offenses, passed the House on third reading in an amended form, 50 ayes, 59, excused 1.
House Bill 43 is assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 97, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 97, Juvenile Hearing Timelines, sponsored by Representative Ludnow, an act relating to juveniles, passed the House on third reading, ayes 47, noes 12, excused 1.
House Bill 97 is assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 67, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 67, Intertribal Education and Community Center, sponsored by the Tribal Relations Committee, and Act Relating to Education, passed the House on third reading, ayes 56, noes 2, excused 1, absent 1.
House Bill 67 is assigned to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. House Bill 85, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 85, Brucellosis Testing Program, sponsored by Representative Olson, an act relating to agriculture and animals. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 58, excused 1, absent 1.
House Bill 85 is assigned to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 46, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 46, Abuse of Animals, sponsored by Representative Berger, an act relating to abuse of animals. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 56, noes 2, excused 1, absent 1.
House Bill 46 is assigned to Committee Number 6, Travel. House Bill 76, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 76, Criminal Street Gangs, sponsored by Representative Stewart, an act relating to crimes and offenses. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 47, noes 11, excused 1, absent 1.
House Bill 76 is assigned to Committee Number 6, Travel. House Bill 109, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 109, Telecommunication Switched Access, sponsored by Representative Illoway, and Act Relating to Telecommunications. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 48, noes 11, excused 1.
House Bill 109 is assigned to Committee Number 7, Corporations. House Bill 48, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 48, State Loan and Investment Board Loans, sponsored by Representative Berger, an act relating to state loan and investment board loans. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 1, absent 1.
House Bill 48 is assigned to Committee Number 9, Minerals. House Bill 100, excuse me, House Bill 13, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 13, psychologist licensure, sponsored by the Mental Health Committee, an act relating to the Wyoming State Board of Psychology. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 58, excused 1, absent 1.
House Bill 13 is assigned to Committee Number 10, Labor. Reports from standing committees.
February the 22nd, 2008, Mr. President, your Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 45, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Fecht, Larson, and Vasey, Senator Larson, Chairman. February the 22nd, 2008, Mr. President, your Committee Number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 14, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Geis, Johnson, Perkins, and Vasey, Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 22nd, 2008, Mr. President, your Committee Number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 111, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Geis, Johnson, Perkins, and Vasey, Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 22nd, 2008, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 90, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 22nd, 2008, Mr. President, your Committee Number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 81, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, Coe, Jennings, Massey, Von Flatern, Senator Coe, Chairman. February the 22nd, 2008, Mr. President, your Committee Number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 25, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, Coe, Jennings, Massey, Von Flatern, Senator Coe, Chairman.
Members of the Senate, on your desk this morning, I think each of you... It is on or it is not? That's the magic touch. One more, really? Members of the Senate, on your desk this morning, there is, for each of you, I think, a glass, I'm not sure what they are, a sculpture, I guess. Those were given to us by our pages. And I think that the parent of one of our pages makes these, and I'd like you to join me in thanking them. It's extremely generous. In my opinion, the pleasure of having them here and helping them understand government is reward enough. But I think this is something we can remember pages by, and these two pages specifically, I'd like you to join me in thanking them. Thank you. Thank you for both. We are now back on third reading of Senate File 1. Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President, we're back on third reading. I need some help here, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. The next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 32 to Senate File 1. The reading clerk will please we'll pause for a moment and go to Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. I may have the privilege of the floor.
You may.
If you take a look at your golden rods that were distributed today, the question that was asked was, how did we jump up to $40 million on the funds available? The answer is that's the way Senate File 77 profiled in. If you look over to the budget reserve account, the consequence of the Senate File 77, that's the severance and tax distribution, reduced the revenue flow to the budget reserve account by $317,900,000. The way it was written up on last night, if you turn over to general fund, you'll see that the revenues increased by $1,950,000, so that we had $317 million go into one or reduced out of one account, $158 million increased to another account. Now, there's also an impact at the 2008 budget bill under the general fund. It would have reduced it because you recall we took out highway funding. It looked to me like there were missing funds the way that it got written up. It was just a complex amendment. And I had thought that the disappearing monies went to the old gentleman cattleman's retirement account up in Gillette. But it turns out they appeared in on the as it turns out, there was less money going to highways, less than the $200 million we had profiled, and it shows up on the total traditional funds available for appropriation for the 43. So you don't have 43 to spend if we maintain the highways at $200 million. And when the amendments that went on today are profiled for next week, it'll drop down to that $23 million less whatever either the houses spend today. So the money's not there. Highways has less money now. And the cattleman's retirement fund up in Gillette does not have the 23, apparently.
Thank you, Senator Nicholas. Back on the amendments.
Senate File 1, standing third reading amendment number 32. Budget 67, University of Wyoming, page 36, line 4.
Mr. President.
Mr. Vice President, I move third reading amendment number 32 to Senate File 1. Mr. Vice President, what this does, it adds $500,000 to the university's budget. It puts it in the Hobbs School of Environment and Natural Resources. Mr. Vice President, I passed out a little bit of literature on this school. This school works as an adjunct to the university, providing that sort of depth, both in experience and in academic challenge, that I think is terribly important if we're going to graduate the kind of excellent scholars and professional people that we want coming out of Laramie. I had a interesting conversation just last week with some executives from a large electric firm, and one of the things they pointed out of why they like to recruit overseas is because overseas engineers have practical experience by the time they graduate, problem solving. And that's one of the things that in America today our graduates and undergraduates don't get a lot of, but luckily at University of Wyoming, we started about 10 years ago saying this has to be part of the dimension of turning out well-rounded graduates. The school is based on a problem-solving mode of education. They analyze problems, they come up with potential solutions, and then they figure out how to enact those solutions. The school itself has grown since 1996 from 10 students to 110. In terms of the graduates, the students, there's 29 majors, 9 minors. In undergraduates, there are 68 majors and 4 minors. Mr. Vice President, you can see they draw students from fish and wildlife, from ag business, zoology, biology, criminal justice, geography, geology, physical science, all across the board. They bring them together in an interdisciplinary approach. They have teams. The graduate students are the leaders of the teams. It really is a dimension that I think adds a tremendous dimension to our education. And the other legitimate question to ask also seems to me is, where do these students go? Where are they employed at? And I've got a handout in that. The private sector picks up about 25% of them, government about 30%, of which the bulk of that is federal and state, education or academia about 17%, and nonprofits about 22%. In terms of the private sector, such companies as Chesapeake Energy Marketing, Options and Choices, CBM Associates, and Michael Baker Corporation, their energy sector, this is very typical of where these students end up at. I think if we truly are going to strive for excellence at our university, this is one of the dimensions we need to ensure that it goes forward. I want to distinguish very carefully that this does not go to the institute. This goes to the students, to that curriculum that's involved. It's worded that way, and it's worded very carefully to do exactly that. They cannot move the funds over into the institute itself. It has to be to provide the breadth of education for these students over in Laramie. I'll try and answer any questions if I can.
Question, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President, I'd like to divide this amendment.
Go ahead, Senator Meyer.
The first division would be lines 1 through 9 and lines 17 and 18.
That is divisible.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President, I would, call for the question on the first division.
First division being lines 1 through 9 and lines 17 and 18.
What is it?
All those in favor of the first division?
I'm
sorry.
Mr. Chairman, and maybe I misheard. The first division is line 1 through 9. What I thought I heard my colleague from Platte County say is lines 17 and 18, and that leaves us with lines 10 through 16 unaccounted for. And I never like to leave $500,000 unaccounted for, Mr. Chairman. That, I'm big and easy, but I'm not that big and easy.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Vice
Senator Chairman. Meyer, would you like to...
We'll amend that division after a little coaching from... the JAC chair, that it's the first division should just be one line 1 through 9. So we're just dealing with the what?
Mr. Chairman, I'll
okay.
do the division.
All right. Okay.
Just for the division's sake.
Jesus, that's
Division 1 would be on lines 8 and 9. The words under general fund increase amount by 500,000. Division 2 would be the balance.
Senator Nicholas, that is a familiar division.
Okay.
Senator Meyer, would you like to speak to that first division?
Yep. Mr. Vice President, I don't mind giving a little bit of money to UW here. We've been very frugal, I think, through this process. We have some left on the table. This goes in the area of excellence in education. I think if the body feels like they want to give UW a little bit of that that's left, then that's, I guess, the body's call.
Mr. President, would you like to speak to that?
Mr. Vice President, I'd ask the Senate to vote in favor of this division and understand how these schools work. There's not a faculty attached to this school. The faculty comes when they can go out and hire, for example, someone from the mineral industry, someone from the economics industry, or a team to come in and do the sets of lectures that are required to achieve a degree in this area. These people are oftentimes part of the university. These people can be from private industry. They can be from the consulting industry. They can be from the production, from any part. But the idea is that you bring in real people and instruct students on how to solve problems. It is different than your standard French department or English department or any other department. It adds a dimension. And quite frankly, you have to pay people, particularly when you're bringing them in, you have to pay them to come in and spend the time that's necessary to enhance their education. It isn't like just shifting checkers around on a checkerboard and things like that. So I urge you, if you want excellence, put resources in. You'll get good people and you'll get good students, but you got to put the resources there. So I urge you to support what is now Division One.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. I, too, would urge you to support this, but from a different perspective. And when I look at the importance of the School of Environment and Natural Resources, and you look at our state, you know, we really are the predominant state in the country in terms of what we do for our country with energy production. I don't know, the number is 12, 14, 15%, and our natural resources are obviously why we do that. It's very important. And I think we're always trying to balance the natural resources with the environment, and we can do that through this Hobbs School by educating these people. You know, it really makes a lot of sense to do that. One other thing, too, fellow senators, is that when we were looking for money to try to talk about uranium, and I'll bring up an amendment here in a little bit to help us in the School of Energy Resources, the university came to me and had a way where they had money that was available that they were willing to give back to try to help on something important to the state. So, you know, I think this is sort of a good way to say we've got confidence in what you do, we appreciate it, and let's put the money here.
Further discussion on the first division. Seeing none, all those in favor of the first division, please say aye.
Aye.
All those, I'm sorry, this is a roll call. It does. First division, the chief.
I'm sorry, Mr. President, before I order.
Yes.
Could you read the exact line?
I will before the roll call. First division being on page, or lines 8 and 9, those words under general fund increase amount by $500,000. That would be the first division. Second division being the rest of the amendment. So the chief clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Allman?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case? Coe, DeCooper, DeCaria, Vecht, Geis, Hastert, Hines, Jennings, Job, Johnson, Landon, Larson, Massey, Meyer, Mockler, Nicholas, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Scott, Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
no.
Basie,
aye.
Von Flatern,
no.
President Schiffer. Closing vote closed. 24 ayes, 6 noes.
By your vote, Division 1 has passed the Senate. We're back now for consideration in the second division. Senator Meyer.
Mr. Vice President, on and against this particular amendment. And, Mr. Vice President, I want to make it clear that I'm not on and against the Hobb School for Environment and Natural Resources. I guess I'm an on and for letting the dean of the colleges, the trustees, and the president of the college handle the educational priorities at the University of Wyoming. And so I ask you to vote no on this amendment.
Further discussion on the second division. Senator Scott.
Mr. Vice President, I'm going to ask for a further division. Mr. Vice President, lines 17 and 18 are needed to go with either half of the amendment. Since we passed the first half, I think we need them. The controversy is over the footnote, which may or may not pass. So I'd ask that 17 and 18 be division number 3.
That is divisible. And we will then continue the discussion on division 2. Division 2 being lines 10 through 16. And that then is the with a discussion. Senator Schiffer, or Mr. President.
Mr. Vice President, and I would urge the Senate to vote for Division 2. And again, there's no dean. This isn't one of your colleges. This isn't your business college or things like that, which is where the funding is decided, as I understand it, at the University of Wyoming. What this does, this is saying we want excellence. Matter of fact, this is saying we not only want it, we want the money there, and this is the direction we believe that the University of Wyoming, as our only land-grant university, this is the direction we believe they should go. There's lots of different ways to achieve excellence. Other schools may achieve excellence in different areas. It so happens that at our university, and I think appropriately so, we look at our two greatest assets, our natural resources and our people in place. And that's what we look to study in this school. How do we mesh those two? That's what it does. And if we set great value by them, as I think we do, I ask you to support Division 2 of this amendment.
Further discussion on the second division. Second division being lines 10 through 16. The question before us. The chief clerk will please call the roll on the second division. Third reading amendment number 32.
Anderson.
Aye.
Allman.
No.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
Aye.
Vecht.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
No.
Job.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon. Larson,
aye.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
no.
Mockler,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
no.
Ross,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
no.
Basie,
aye.
Bonflatern,
aye.
President Schiffer.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 24 ayes, 6 noes.
By your vote, second division of third reading amendment number 32 to Senate File 1 has passed the Senate. We are now ready for consideration of the third division of Senate third reading amendment number 32. Would the senator who requested division want to address this further, and would he require a voice vote on such?
Mr. Vice President, it is just a voice vote. Since we passed the balance of it, we clearly need this.
Thank you. Question before you is on the third division of the third reading amendment 32, Senate File 1. All those in favor of the third division being lines 17 and 18, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. By your votes, Third reading amendment 32 to Senate File 1 has in its entirety passed the Senate in its original form. With that, Mr. President.
Third reading amendment number 37 to Senate File 1. Would the reading clerk please, that's the Bebout Anderson Vasey amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 37, Budget 67, University of Wyoming, page 36, line 4.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 37 to Senate File 1. Ladies and gentlemen, we talked about this extensively the other day and the importance of uranium to the state of Wyoming. You know, we're the largest producer in the country, and the uranium industry with the price of uranium going up is really something that we can look forward to in the future. And part of that is the in-situ recovery way method of mining for that product. As we start off with the School of Energy Resources and it gets up to speed, I think it's really important that this body send a message to them through this this proposed amendment that we think energy is important. And obviously nuclear power is a part of that, so we would like to have the School of Energy Resources take a hard look at getting that involved in their curriculum. And there's $300,000 from their budget that's within the AML funding portion of our budget, and this would direct them to do that for the cause as pointed out in here. And I think it's important that we do this as a body because it is a priority, I think, that the state of Wyoming should step up for. So I'd ask for your support.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, a question for the sponsor of the amendment. Is this meant to be a one-time appropriation, or is it meant to be an ongoing appropriation once this money has run out a year or two down the line?
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. A couple things that occur to me is I'm not sure what advancement of uranium energy resources means, specifically with regard to advancement. I know that in talking with folks at the university or community colleges, any higher education institution, they understand when you talk in terms of research and instruction, but I'm not sure what advancement would mean, especially a specific type of advancement with regard to in-situ recovery. The $300,000 is a good chunk of money, but I do know the university doesn't have any professors or at this point any particular expertise in order to do the research in this particular area. If indeed this is ongoing money that's going to be there year in and year out, then they could hire that expertise. And but if it's just one-time funding, it'll be very difficult to attract them. In addition, this is taking money away from other resources or other priorities at the university, and we as a legislature would be setting that priority rather than relying upon the board, which we created in statute to make these kinds of decisions.
Further discussion before the sponsor takes his second shot. Further discussion? Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President, and for my second time, this is a one-time appropriation, but so is their entire budget. If you look at the Section 300 series under the AML funding, you'll see in there that there's about $17.5 million. And that's to fund the SER for 2-year period, but it is one-time money. So it is part of that, but it's one-time money just like all the rest of it is. To talk about the advancement, if you look at in-situ mining, I mean, it's a proven technology that does work, but it needs to be advanced. There's better ways to do it. And certainly as we look at it, particularly in given the basins and the type of geology that exists in Wyoming, we have some other producing horizons that if we advance that type of technology, we might be able to produce that uranium ore in a cost-effective manner and create jobs and opportunities and those kind of things. As far as the SER having people on board, your answer is correct. They do not have people on board like this. I've spoken with the head of that department or the head of the school, and he understands this. He would like to do this, and he thinks this gives him the opportunity to do it. He's not sure whether initially he'll bring in the people to do it, outside expertise, or try to build it as we go, but it's a start. And, Mr. President, that's the whole purpose of it.
The question is on third reading amendment number. Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I would like to just take a minute, if I may, to address this issue. And I would say that within my district, there is an in-situ mining operation. It is one of the largest ones in the United States. I don't know now. I think they're employing upward of 300 people, and they have ads for people every day. I would simply say in regard to expertise, much of the expertise was developed on site at that site, and so there's a good deal of that expertise being developed there that could be shared in other endeavors of uranium mining around the state as that continues to evolve. And I would just simply say that there's a distinct relationship or interest, subsurface interest between in-situ uranium mining, carbon sequestration, carbon storage, and how that might unfold over time. Also, with coal bed methane development, uranium mining by the in-situ process is a drilling process, but that comes under a mining permit. Coal bed methane is a drilling process. That comes under a drilling permit. And so then there has to be working relationships between established between those entities, and also in regard to expertise that might be on hand would be underground hydrology and certainly a knowledge of basic chemistry and other things like that. So as we view these practices kind of coming together within our kind of energy abundant state, we need to do, in fact, advance some of the technology and some of the thinking that goes into to developing these relationships that we just described responsibly. And so I would hope that we could enlist the University School of Energy to do this, and I would ask your favorable consideration. Thank you.
Further discussion? The question is on third reading amendment number 37. Would the chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson?
Aye.
Allman?
No.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
No.
Fecht?
No.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
No.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
Aye.
Job?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Larson?
Aye.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Mockler? Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Scott?
No.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend?
No.
Basie?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Schiffer?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 13 ayes, 17 noes.
Third reading amendment number 37 has failed to pass the Senate. Third reading amendment number 11, the Massey Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 11, Budget 69, Western Interstate Commission for Higher Education, page 36, line 18.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 11 to Senate File 1. Mr. President, this gets at the footnote that's on the bottom of page 36 of the budget, which stipulates that students for the first time in Wichita, beginning this July, when they enroll, will be required to have a payback as part of their agreement to participate in Wichita. And this amendment would seek to eliminate that footnote. A few minutes ago, a handout was passed out to everybody on their desk, and I'm going to refer to this as explaining the reason for bringing this amendment forward. The front page of this amendment talks about or lists the various occupations which are included in WICHE and which would fall under this provision. It's in addition to dentists and physicians. It would be occupational therapist, people in optometry, osteopathic medicine, pharmacy, physical therapists, physician assistants, podiatrists, and veterinarians would also fall under these provisions. Over on the second page demonstrates the difference between students who enroll in WICHE and those who enroll in WAMI as well as the dental program that we set up last year and the varying costs to the students and to the state. In the medical program for WICHE, a student who enrolls there can go to some of the medical colleges in the western states that participate in WICHE, and they're going to accumulate a debt of about $20,000 to $40,000 a year. For the state of Wyoming, which pays the difference between the in-state and out-of-state tuition for that medical school. It's about $27,000 a year that the state pays into it. For WAMI, the student there, the tuition that they'll have to pay is about half that, or a little bit less than half of what the WICHE student would pay. And remember, the University of Washington has probably the top rural medicine program in the United States. And with regard to the state of Wyoming, the state pays about $60,000 a year, or more than double what it does for WICHE. Under the dental program, the dental students in WICHE are even more, $40,000 to $50,000 a year. The state pays $21,000. Under the program we set up with Creighton and the University of Nebraska, the cost to the student who goes there is about one quarter of what it is for WICHE, whereas for the state it's about 2.5 times. Now, the reason that we set up the payback payments and requirements for WAMI and the dental program is because we set those programs up specifically to train those students to come back here. And we're giving them a heck of a deal by making these arrangements with those universities outside of Wyoming. And that's the reason for the payback. It's because the state's investing so much money in it. Whereas with the WICHE program, it's the student that's really investing a great deal of the money. And they're going to come out of there with a lot more loans. And that's the reason that traditionally, or one of the reasons traditionally, we have not required a payback. So if this amendment were to stay on, then the students who are accumulating the most debt and the state has putting in the least amount of money would have the same payback requirements as those that are in the WICHE or in the WAMI program and in the dental program. So I think just out of a sense of fairness, we should eliminate this footnote, but also in a sense of history, and that the reason the WICHE program was set up was to allow students to access programs that the University of Wyoming did not provide. Thank you.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd urge you to resist this amendment. You know, I don't think we ever created the WICHE program to tell people that get an education and leave the state and never come back. The WICHE was created to provide opportunities for people in the hopes that they'd come back to our students. There are children going out. There is no payback obligation. All we're asking is that if the state of Wyoming is going to contribute to the cost of your education, come back to Wyoming and spend 3 years. And history tells us that if people come back, spend 3 years here, they'll probably stay. And if they don't want to, that's fine. You go to school and in Mexico, there's an forced obligation to go out and do rural medicine for a variety of years, or several years. There's no reason why these students shouldn't come back here and pay back the state of Wyoming for the largesse that we've given by at least providing 3 years of service. And if they don't want to come back, all they have to do is repay that $27,400 at a very low interest and pay the state back as a loan. It's a great loan program if that's what you don't want to do. But the idea that we create a program knowing that these students have no intention of ever coming back to Wyoming really makes no sense. I urge you to defeat the amendment.
Senator Job.
Thank you. I stand in favor of this amendment. And I'm thinking if you carry the logic of the previous speaker forward, then, by gosh, all of those kids going to the University of Wyoming right now better stick around for 3 years or pay us back. You know, we're paying for the university. We pay the Hathaway scholarship for them to go there. When you get to the professional level, you can get into pharmacy school. We now have more healthcare-related fields that we pay for, and those kids can take their careers and their dreams anywhere they want to go. And because we couldn't do it in these specific areas in WICHE, we are helping them do that out of state. And so the intention was entirely different than the WAMI program, and I just think that making this change now puts one group of students at a disadvantage. We in Wyoming pay and subsidize education for everyone. And when we create a specific program to make them come back, that's one thing. But on the rest of it, we ought to have a level playing field, and these kids ought to be in that level playing field. Thank you.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, speaking on and for the amendment, it does seem to me that the debate here has illustrated some of the hazards of legislating in the budget bill. This really, and frankly, I think maybe a payback period is in order, at least for some of the professions that are involved here. But it seems to me that there's some really complicated questions of equity. You know, that it's a different program from WAMI. We're not paying as high a percentage of the tuition. It is designed for a different purpose. Given our shortages in the healthcare area, we may want to adapt it a bit. And some of these kids do come back. Not all of them, but some of them do. And I think that the proper procedure here, if you want to change this, is to bring a bill, run it through the process, have hearings, get some public input, and not to try to change some legislation in the budget, which is what this footnote is doing. And I would urge us to pass the amendment and resist this effort to legislate in the budget bill.
Further discussion? Question being called for. The question is on third reading amendment number 11. This does not affect spending one way or the other, so I'm going to take a voice vote, barring objection. The question is on third reading amendment number 11. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Third reading amendment number 11 has passed the Senate. Third reading amendment number 12, the Fett-Hastert-Johnson amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 1, Third Reading Amendment Number 12, Budget 72, Retirement System, page 38, line 4.
Senator Feck.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move Third Reading Amendment Number 12 to Senate File Number 1. I'd say the other day, 2 days ago, we discussed an amendment similar to this, but the funding came from general funds. There seemed to be a strong concern from the body that was an inappropriate choice for the funding source. So the only difference here is it changes that funding source and directs the retirement account to conduct a study. The other concern that I heard quite a bit of from discussion the other day was that by funding this study, it was an endorsement of proposed legislation. And I really don't know how to get around that one because I don't know how you endorse or oppose a subject until after you've had a chance to study it and look at it. But this does change the funding source, and that's the only thing it does different. Thank you, sir.
Further, Senator Nichols.
Thank you, Mr. President. Proponent can discuss it later, but it appears to me the notion is we're going to encourage law enforcement folks to accrue this rapid, generous retirement, retire and go back into the system somehow to double dip. And I don't, you know, if the notion is that these folks deserve these accelerated retirements, I'm just not certain why we would ever want to fund the practice of double dipping.
Further discussion? The question is on third reading amendment number 12. Would the chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson?
No.
Allman?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
DeCaria?
No.
Fecht?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Job? Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
No.
Larson? Massey?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Mockler?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend?
No.
Basie?
No.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Schiffer?
No.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 5 ayes, 25 noes.
Third reading amendment number 12 has failed to pass the Senate. Third reading amendment number 13, the Meyer-Jennings amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 13, Budget 80, Department of Corrections, page 39, line 8.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 13 to Senate File 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. This, Mr. President, on second reading, I had an amendment, but it was all general fund appropriations. This goes into and directs the Department of Corrections to use some of their existing funds to fund one of the priorities they had in their budget, which was the global position tracking system for a high-risk sex offender population. It's approximately 60 high-risk sex offender populations that are people that get out. Mr. President, these are the worst of the worst. The governor did deny this, and the reason he denied it because he said there was money in the previous budget for GPS systems. Mr. President, that is true. It was GPS systems, but there's a lot of difference between GPS tracking systems. What they have now is the big box low rent tracking systems. They cost a couple of bucks a day to run. They'll give you some information on where the guy was last week, but they won't really give you the real-time type of data that you need for these predators. If you have someone that's kidnapped at a convenience store or something, and the Amber Alert goes out, it would be really nice to know if there was one of these predators at that convenience store in that camera. You'd know exactly who he was because you could match those things up. And this is what this is intended to do. It's to track the worst of the worst, the real predators that are out there, and they know them, who they are. They've been with them. They've lived for a long time in that incarcerated environment. And they know that these are the bad actors. And they go through a risk management assessment type of a thing. It's a standardized deal, and they know what questions to ask these people, and they know how to define who they are. And so, Mr. President, I think it's just really to protect our population, our general population, from these folks when they get out. This is a cheap way to do it.
Senator Nichols.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I support the amendment, but not for the same reasons, and it's clear to take a look at the amendment. This amendment does not require Department of Corrections to spend $1 on this program. All it does is say within these dollars you have spending authority up to this amount. So it's fully discretionary on their part. The testimony was that the department would like to engage in or utilize some of these resources because they think under some circumstances it would not only be safe, but it might save money for in the long haul. And we made clear, I believe, during the process that we believed that if within their budget, they'd if they felt it was appropriate, they could utilize these practices. Because the amendment, then there was discussion as to whether or not the department felt like it couldn't do it without some authorization. All this is spending or authority authorization. It does not force them or direct them to do anything.
Senator Mockler.
Mr. President, when I looked at the Department of Corrections budget, this is number 47 on their list. So I guess I'm just trying to get a sense of prioritization. If we're moving and sort of implying that we want them to take their money for their 47th priority, then I think we have to go back to the discussion we had earlier about when is it we get to participate in this process. Because now we're listening to, it's okay with some budgets to come in with number 47, but it's not okay with some budgets to come in at 11. So I just think we ought to be a little more consistent here. And I'm not entirely convinced this is an appropriate way to micromanage a program.
Thank you. Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. First of all, thank you for the senator from Platte County not letting an ankle bracelet go by without my name on it. I think this is I'm sorry, I couldn't resist. I think this is rather important because even though it was down on their list and it's not requiring them, the Department of Corrections to do this, it's just allowing them to do it. And they know which one of these guys, when they release, should have this on there. The choice is, if you don't allow them to put these on there, then we're going to keep them in jail a lot longer because they know that these are the guys that can't be out there in the general public unless you can track them a little bit. They have experience with them in the Department of Corrections. They know how to do it, and they know which guys to put them on. I would hope that you would support this amendment.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. I guess question. If these guys are the worst of the worst, then why do we even want them out at all?
Further discussion? The question is, on third reading, Senator Meyer, why?
Well, how do you answer that one? I guess give them some dog biscuits and keep them in there, you know. Mr. President, I don't want to say that. I don't want them out. Gosh, my goodness. But the law is the law, and the law says they serve so much time, and when they've served their time, then, you know, they get let out. But we need to know where they're at when they are. As far as how the priorities are, you know, this is the book, and whether it's down the list, I can tell you that I saw at least 138 priorities in the Department of Corrections, and there's other sections and other priorities. They've got hundreds of priorities. Now, they've got a lot of what we found out, which was called tailings. It's a new word for me, and that's money that we know they'll probably have left over. It used to be reversions that don't revert, but there's some money in there for some positions, and they'll probably have that money. But we don't want to just give them a blank check. We want to be able to authorize them and to have a little bit of control over the tailings, and this is what this does.
I apologize, Mr. Tailings is a term of art for dollars to dollars that sort of accrue. They're reversions, and you don't get to spend your tailings like that. You have to have an appropriation.
The question is, on third reading amendment number 13, would the chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson?
No.
Allman?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
No.
Vecht?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Job?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Larson?
Aye.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Mockler?
No.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
Aye.
Basie?
No.
Bonflatern?
Aye.
President Schiffer?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 17 ayes, 13 noes.
Third reading amendment number 13 has passed the Senate. Third reading amendment number 14, the Bebout case amendment. Would the reading clerk please read the amendment?
Senate file 1, third reading amendment number 14, budget 85, Wyoming Business Council, page 40, line 22.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 14 to Senate file 1. Very quickly, we saw this amendment the other day. It was a very close vote, and I just wanted to revisit it and bring up a couple of, I think, important points in regard to this. This is the allows the Wyoming Business Council to enter into cooperative agreements with the Shoshone and Arapaho tribes on the Wind River Indian Reservation for Community Facilities Program. If you look in your statutes, we already have this identical language on community infrastructure programs. Same language, same program, only it's under the community infrastructure operated by the Wyoming Business Council. If you look at the definition of what the community facilities program does, it is a purpose of this article to assist communities to preserve former school and government facilities that have existing or future community uses. You know, there's certainly opportunities on the reservation where we might have these uses. I will tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that I don't always agree with the tribes on issues, and particularly in the water and some of the positions they've taken. I'm supporting our state engineer in those regards. I think that the position they've taken is not one that I feel comfortable with. But in the same sense, I really feel like that we need to work with these people. This is a good idea and a good thing that we should do, and give them the opportunity to participate in the community facilities program. So I'd ask for your support.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm a little confused by the amendment. As I read the amendment, there's absolutely no spending authority in this amendment. There's no authorization to spend a dollar. The only thing that I could see in this amendment is that the council would be authorized in an agreement where they could provide staffing time, and their staff could help them go develop anything. But if the purpose is to develop or to expend funds out of the program, this has no spending authority. The spending authority would require language authorized to expend. There is no spending authority in this language.
Further discussion? Senator Case.
Well, Mr. Chairman, our intent is most definitely to allow for expending authority. We did bring this identical amendment the other day, and that point wasn't mentioned. So here it is, third reading. Not much else we can do but send this amendment forward. Hope maybe that might be an item that can be worked out in the conference committee. I don't have a better solution. I will point out, just in terms of the merits, is that we do collect mineral revenues from the tribes, from the minerals produced on the Wind River Indian Reservation. That mineral revenue is funding the schools, has funded the other program that was mentioned, the community infrastructure program, and many other programs. So I think it's good to allow the tribes to apply for these funds for their community facilities, which are, of course, our school buildings. I do hope that we can get past the problem that the good chairman of the Appropriations Committee mentioned. I would suggest we pass the amendment, and we'll take a look at the amendment that was passed in the House. And I'm sorry to refer to the other House. I apologize. But we can just see if there's any room to put this together.
Question is, on third reading amendment number 14, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
That third reading amendment number 14 does pass. All in favor of third reading amendment number 14, please stand. All opposed, please stand. Third reading amendment number 14 has not passed the Senate. Third reading amendment number 15. The Sessions-Job amendment. Would the reading clerk please read the amendment?
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 15, budget section 205, education school finance, page 55, line 9.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. President, I'd like to move third reading amendment number 15 to Senate File 1 and ask for your support. What this does, it spends no money, and it asks for no authority to spend money. What it does is it's asking the Department of Ed shall study the feasibility of implementing a growth model system of student assessment to meet the requirements of the federal No Child Left Behind Act. And the reason it's a timely thing to bring forward, and the reason we are is I'd like to read you just two of our statutes that when we did education reform several years ago, that we put into statute that recognizes the growth of the individual as valuable. And I will tell you that there are states in the U.S. now, or parts of states, that have been given permission by the feds, to implement or to investigate a growth model. What the last thing I heard on the reauthorization of the federal No Child Left Behind is that they're working on increasing the ability to recognize growth models in whether states have recognized the No Child Left Behind requirements. And so that, and a growth model, senators, recognizing, we all know that all of us have different levels when we enter into a learning situation. And what we want to recognize is just not what's at the end. What we want to recognize is where you get a child at any level, where you get that child, and how far that child can be taken in a given period of time. The mechanism we use now for No Child Left Behind is, they explained the statistics to me and all the things that they use to determine whether you're proficient, advanced, or not proficient, or below proficiency, and whatever. What we would do is then, and you would take the growth, increments of the child to decide whether that child had met proficiency or had been taught that year. And I don't know what they'll call it because I haven't asked the people that are doing the investigations and designing the growth models. I don't know what they're going to call it. I don't know whether they'll call it advanced, proficient, whatever. But we have children entering our classrooms that have nothing, in essence. They don't hold a pair of scissors. They have not been out of a little tiny location. In the same classroom, you will have children who have been everywhere and have done everything and whose homes are filled with wonderful things. What should you recognize? Should you recognize the child that zooms...
30 seconds, Senator Sessions.
...zoom to advancement, or should you recognize the level of advancement that a child makes? So I won't read you... I was going to read you all this legislation. Do you want me to read it just for fun? Do I have a... I'll just hurry and read it. We put it, the individual growth, we put it in twice. The assessment results, shall be reported to on this in an accurate and complete manner on the individual progress, student progress. That's in one section of our law. The other section is, provide a reliable and valid measure of individual student achievement. And all we're asking is to look at ways to recognize that in when we say whether a child is whatever label we give them. So I hope you will vote for this. Thank you.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I'm torn by this amendment and having difficulty understanding how to vote on it. I know that the growth measurement is a good way of assessing student progress. I know my district uses it because you're getting valuable information on how much value the education system is adding, and that's very useful for managerial purposes. On the other hand, if this is intended to supplant the existing PAWS test, then I think it's a bad idea, because the trouble we've got, Mr. President, with our assessments is every time you change the assessment, it takes you 2 or 3 years to figure out what the new assessment really means. And when we changed from YCAS to PAWS, we lost accountability because you can't compare. You can't tell whether your school system is getting better or getting worse. So that's one problem I have. Second problem is I do think while measuring growth and value added is very useful in managing the schools, it is also very useful to have some absolute proficiency levels Are they getting the job done in terms of getting the kids' knowledge and ability up to what they need to function in the modern world? And I think if you went strictly with a growth model, that would be a mistake. So I do need some clarification as to where this is intended to go and whether it's intended to result in the pause test being supplanted.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. I recently sat down with my youngins' teachers, and we went over all this. I don't think there was anything that the good senator mentioned that we didn't talk about. Said he doesn't work hard enough here. We know we can work to this level there. Next year he should be here. I think that something like this probably should be taken through the committee process. We had our last joint meeting here in Cheyenne, and I think there's going to be too many questions out of this to how are we comparing to what we're doing now. And when you go and look at the number of studies that we have the Education Department doing right now, it's a ton of them, folks. And without having time to really develop this to what we think we want out of it, I think it would be unfair to education to just dump this on them with a footnote and then come back and say, well, you did a lousy job because you didn't produce what we were asking to produce. So I'd ask you to vote no on this, and then let's go over there and rattle my good chairman from Park County's cage and get him to bring it up in the interim so that we can take a good hard look at it and see how it compares and what we can do with it.
Senator Cole.
Well, Mr. Chairman, having thought about this a little bit since the sponsor came and talked to me about it, and I'm be honest with you, I didn't know much about the growth model system before she came and talked to me. Remember that with No Child Left Behind, Wyoming basically started No Child Left Behind before the federal government did. We started No Child Left Behind after the first Supreme Court decision. We came in with YCAS testing and now have PAWS testing, proficiency assessment, Wyoming students, and the good senator from Natrona County is exactly right. What I'm fearful of, based on what the other good senator from Casper said, there are tremendous reporting requirements back to the department nowadays. We have piled burdens of stuff on them. To say, here we're going to do something else to you and put no money in it, I think it's probably wrong at this time. The intent of the amendment's good. I just think it needs to come and have more of a hearing in front of us, honestly, and to consider it. And I respect the intent of the amendment, but I'd ask you to vote no.
Senator Job.
Thank you, Mr. President. I do ask for your support of this amendment, and I will try to answer some of the questions that have been on the floor. And I would just give you as background, I was on the assessment design team that resulted in PAWS, although PAWS is not exactly what we recommended at the time. And there are a lot of reasons for that, mostly associated with the previous administration. This was one of our original recommendations, and it came from a lot of teachers, and it came from a lot of parents, because just knowing whether students are proficient or not on a certain grade level's benchmarks and standards isn't all that informative when it comes down to making instructional decisions or for parents to know whether their child in third grade really made all the progress that they needed. It also helps with at-risk students when you have an achievement gap, because you have to accelerate that achievement and close that gap to get those kids to proficient levels. And so it gives you very valuable information when you're working with at-risk students in your school. So there's a lot of good reasons to do a growth model, and it was an original recommendation that just got lost in the shuffle. In fact, our current publisher of PAWS sat in front of that team and said they could do this, and they didn't. So it is possible, and it is doable, and it was recommended. It just wasn't done. I would tell you that I think this amendment says study the feasibility also supports the Wyoming Department of Education, because growth models is a current best practice, and I think they are seriously looking at it. I think our current superintendent is out shopping for a new test publisher, and it would be the ideal time to support them in looking for this growth model. And you can either, it doesn't have to be one or the other. You can do both, or you can have a package that provides both of those. So you're not throwing one out for the other. These should complement and support each other to get a comprehensive look at how well children are learning. And Natrona County does have a growth model, and they're the one district that could give us good information on the design team for summer school on how effective that program is being for at-risk kids. So there's a lot of value to it. All the sponsor is doing is asking that they study the feasibility, and in the end, I think it supports the direction that the Wyoming Department of Education wants to move anyway. So I would ask for your support.
Further question is on third reading amendment number 15. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 15 has failed to pass the Senate. Division being called for. All in favor, please rise. All those opposed, please rise. Third reading amendment number 15 has failed to pass the Senate. Third reading amendment number 16, the Mockler Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 16, Budget 6, Administration and Information, page 73, line 6.
Senator Mockler.
Mr. President, I'd like to move third reading amendment number 16 to Senate File 1 and ask that we dispense with further reading of the amendment. Yesterday, we worked on a bill that is trying to consolidate the funds that we've put together for the rehabilitation of the Capitol. This is simply to say that if the budget passes the way it is right now, there's $10 million set aside in the budget for the Capitol restoration. What this does is sweep it into the new account that's created by Senate File 87 so that all of the money pretty much goes into the same place. There's one pot of halfway there gold, and I think it makes it very consistent. So it doesn't spend any money. It's just trying to get it all in the same place.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. President, we support this amendment.
Question. Further discussion? Question being called for. All those in favor of third reading amendment number 16, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Third reading amendment number 16 has passed the Senate. Third reading amendment number 17, the Massey Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read the amendment?
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 17, Budget Section 3, Capital Construction, page 74, line 14.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 17 to Senate File 1. We had a lengthy discussion about this a couple of days ago. This would provide $50 million additional money into the Hathaway Scholarship Program instead of the $100 million between two accounts that we talked about 2 days ago. And as a reminder, it would intercept the flow of the first $50 million of COOL bonus money going from the school construction account back into the school foundation account. The discussion a couple of days ago centered around several different topics, but the primary pressing need that was brought forward was the fact that based upon some conservative and fairly accurate projections, the Hathaway Scholarship Endowment Fund will not be able to meet expenses within a couple of years. The projections are based upon a couple years of experiences of students, one full year and about 90% of another one. About 90% of the expenditures for this year are already in, and they're increasing. And the projections are this has become an even more popular program, even when the career scholarships or when the career success curriculum kicks in. and folks start graduating as a result of that program in 3 or 4 years. And also based upon conservative projections by the state treasurer, and the state treasurer, we rely upon that person's or that agency's projections for lots of different things, is that by about 2 years from now when this is fully loaded, we're going to be facing about a $2 million a year deficit. That's conservative. It could be as high as $5 million a year. And then with Senate File 21, that just passed out of the Senate and is moved over to the other chamber, it's estimated that another $300,000 to $500,000 a year of expenses are going to be added to that. So we do need to put some additional funding into it. If we wait too long in order to document how much the shortfall is going to be, then we're going to wind up with a shortfall because it's going to take at least a year or so in order for this added investment to begin generating any kind of income. So I don't really think I need to provide any more details, Mr. President. We talked over a lot of this quite a bit 2 days ago. This one, again, is just $50 million, cool bonus money, strictly for the Hathaway Scholarship Endowment Fund.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. This amendment and the next two amendments have the same funding source. I just want to make sure everybody understands what the funding source is as you make your decision. You recall we have, in order to cover our school capital construction, we have taken $271 million out of the school foundation program, moved it into the school capital construction account. In the event that there are co-lease bonuses that exceed the appropriation required to build schools, then the school capital construction account from those co-lease bonuses is required to repay the school foundation program the $271 million. What this is doing is intercepting or essentially scalping off of that repayment $50 million. If the budget stayed exactly the way it is today, and we had all the revenues we believed, and we had the co-lease bonuses to allow this repayment, what would happen at the end of the biennium is there would be $100 million still in the foundation program, and the $271 million would go into the corpus of the Common School Permanent Land Fund. So the effect of this amendment is to, if everything was static under that scenario, $221 million would be going into the corpus of the Common School Permanent Land Fund. That's the number on line 21. And $50 million would be going into the corpus of the Hathaway Trust Fund. That's what happens, and that is true for each of the next two amendments. A different amount.
Senator Cole.
Mr. President, thank you. Rising in support of the amendment, the body probably remembers how we funded Hathaway. And, boy, what a marvelous program. And we took a balance every July 1st, I believe, to the good senator from Laramie. If there was $100 million in that account, then we started moving a percentage of that into the Hathaway and the Higher Education Endowment Fund. And this thing funded itself in 3 years. Now, there is a question right now, in my mind, and the sponsor of the amendment, whether or not we're really going to be able to have enough out there for our obligations on what might happen. Where is there a better place to put part of this money that we used to take anyway than in this amendment right here? I think it's an insurance to be able to go to our young people and make sure, particularly 4 years from now, let's think about 4 years from now, particularly to have the insurance that we are going to have the money there to fund the program. The other aspect of it is that if you put it to work like we do with the Hathaway funds, you have a chance to have that grow and create some total return for the future of all the kids. So I urge that you support the amendment.
Senator Von Flatter.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against this amendment, once again, you're locking up these funds. Once again, we're saying through predictions in a couple years we might be out of money. We have at least two, if not three more sessions between that moment and then, which we can make those alterations to the funding and bring it up. But right now, you are saying we're going to tie these funds up at this moment. betting on some poor projections for the future investment of the Hathaway corpus. So I ask you to vote against this. Let's take three more sessions we'll have before this thing will be short of money to fund it. So I ask you to vote this amendment down.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. We ought to go back and remember the little slogan that we created and that we got in all the papers as we did this Hathaway bill. I believe it went promises made, promises kept. We've made a promise that we to the state and to the kids and the teachers and everybody else out there that we were going to develop this Hathaway fund, and it was going to be there forever, unlike other states that have tried to do this, other general fund, stuff like that. Now, I have to admit, I probably brought the first bill up this year to go messing around with this revenue stream. At this point, I'm thankful that that bill failed, because we have everything in place now. We have all the funding streams built, and now we have a question on whether or not we're going to be able to keep that promise made. And I think we just leave it alone, put this extra money in there. Once it's in there, then we shift over to whatever, to the what the chairman of appropriations is talking about, and then we take care of that side of it. But we made a promise, and we have a real good chance here of not being able to keep that promise. So let's approve this amendment and then move on.
Further discussion? Senator Massey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. And just to note one thing, I guess if you talk about these funds going into a constitutionally protected trust fund or an endowment, then they're going to get locked up either way. You just have to decide where you want the money to go to. Okay, the $50 million goes into a constantly protected corpus or endowment. And if you don't put it there, then it's going to go into another constitutionally protected corpus or endowment. Okay, here, you're going to use it to benefit the kids.
The question is on third reading amendment number 17. Would the chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson?
Aye.
Allman?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
No.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Fecht?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
Aye.
Job? Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Mockler,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
no.
Vasey,
aye.
Von Flatern,
no.
President Schiffer,
no.
Closing vote. Cooper, no to aye. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 22 ayes, 8 noes.
Third reading amendment number 17 has passed the Senate. Third reading amendment number 18, the Mockler amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate file 1, third reading amendment number 18, budget section 3, capital construction, page 74, line 19.
Senator Mockler.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to move third reading amendment number 18 to Senate File 1 and ask that we dispense with further reading of the amendment. This goes, as the Chairman of Appropriations noted, into the same formula of distribution that we did with the last amendment. Essentially what it says is that the Hathaway money stays where it is in the track we just sent it, which is on the way to the Hathaway Scholarship Fund. And in addition, it takes another $50 million and puts it $50 million and puts it into the capital restoration account. What we're intercepting again is pretty much the Coley's bonus money. When I first got here, Coley's bonus money wasn't very much, I must confess, and we were so broke we used up every penny. We stole water money, we did everything we could to make the budgets. But the intent really of Coley's bonus money was to put infrastructure in the state. And when we got to the capital construction of schools, we diverted all the Coley's bonus money to the schools. And we're getting closer to we've met that need every year, and we're starting to redirect some of the money. So I think this one little diversion is a good diversion. It's starting to get us about halfway through to where we need to be with the construction of the Capitol and the rehabilitation. So I would like you to consider yet another filling of the Capitol restoration account.
Question is, on third reading amendment number 18, would the chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson?
Aye.
Allman?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
No.
Teceria?
Aye.
Fecht?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Job? Johnson?
No.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
No.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Mockler?
Aye.
Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
Aye.
Scott?
No.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
No.
Basie?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Schiffer?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing, vote closed. 15 ayes, 15 noes.
Third reading amendment number 18 has failed to pass the Senate. Third reading amendment number 19, the Mockler amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate file 1, third reading amendment number 19, budget section 3, capital construction. Delete the Massey third reading amendment.
Senator Mockler.
Mr. President, I'd like to withdraw that amendment.
Hearing no objection, third reading amendment number 19 is withdrawn. Third reading amendment number 20, the Meyer amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate file 1, third reading amendment number 20. Budget section 57, community colleges, after 74, page 74, after line 23.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 20 to Senate file 1. Mr. President, this requires no state funds, general or otherwise. It is merely an authorization for the community colleges to, I guess, get their fundraising shoes on. I know that's what our community college is going to have to do to build the facilities that's necessary to provide a quality educational experience at our community colleges. I think most of colleges have something in this. You have a training center at Casper College, and Central Wyoming College has an allied health project. EWC actually has a workforce development kind of a function that's actually is going to be in Converse County, having to do with a manufacturing center. That's a cooperative agreement between their economic development people up there and EWC. We have also a Center for Excellence in Education that goes into the EWC area. LCCC is hoping to do a fine arts complex. And you have Northwest Community College for a science and tech building, and a Center for Creative Economics, and Western Wyoming College has a science building. Mr. President, I think all of these institutions, considering we have decided that we wanted more enrollment yesterday by allowing the construction or the authorization of dormitories, it'd be nice if those students had the possibility of some fine facilities at our different community colleges. I would hope that the body would look upon this request favorably Again, it's just authorization and no funds from the state.
Discussion on the amendment. Question is on third reading amendment number 20. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Third reading amendment number 20 does pass the Senate. Third reading amendment number 21, the Mockler Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 21. Budget section 300, page 77, after line 7.
Senator Mockler.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to move third reading amendment number 21 to Senate File 1 and ask that we dispense with further reading of the amendment. I've been trying to save money all day, so I thought I'd try one more time. We have a permanent mental trust fund savings account, which I know you guys are all familiar with. It was sort of our very, very barely constitutional way to put some money aside and to kind of hold it a little bit before it went into the permanent mental trust fund to ensure that it could be inflation-proofing the fund. It was a very precarious way to do it because the Constitution said that all of that money should go into the general fund. But we were very clever and we got it done. But we had a very low threshold before the money itself rolled into the permanent fund. We've reached a point where we're not entirely sure that every year we need to have all of that money sweep in, that sometimes we actually have to look and see if we're actually between the legislative stabilization account and this account, if we're at the right amount of money to be putting in the permanent mineral trust fund. So this changes the formula, which we have, which is a percentage formula, and puts it at a cap that says everything over the $200 million that comes into this spending policy stays in this account, and everything over it flows into the permanent mineral trust fund. And this, with this cap, about $40 million will flow into it this year. So that was a real quick explanation of how that account works. But it's one that, if you've ever seen the chart, it kind of goes in circles. But as I said, it's one we created as one of the first. It was the first inflation proofing of the permanent mineral trust fund that we did. Since then, we've done two others. So the account's really quite stable right now. And I think what we need to provide on the other end of it is some stability for the state.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment. Ladies and gentlemen, remember where we came from. When the permanent mineral trust fund first started out, we restricted all investments to fixed income investments, just like our pooled income that is our non-trust fund assets. The next step was to authorize the treasurer to invest up to 25% of the corpus into equities. And finally, about two treasurers ago, there was a move to increase the ability of the fund to invest in equities up to 50%. As part of that, it was an effort to go around and look at trust funds around the country and figure out how do you do this and how does it work. One of the models that was taken was the Harvard Trust. And when you start looking at what they learned is that if you get into equities, you establish a spending policy where you don't spend any more than 5%, and then allow other capital gains to return to the corpus, not only will you be able to sustain a steady 5% revenue to your general fund, which incidentally is more than at this time that our pooled fixed income assets are returning to us. So one benefit is that you get to have a 5% consistent spending. The other benefit is that you can then risk half of your portfolio in equities, or even more possibly. And then you, by having the reinvestment into the corpus, you can protect yourself from fluctuations, gross fluctuations in the market. If you have a subprime loss, your corpus, if you do it right, will still never fall below your cash contributions. Your corpus should grow. It wasn't about 3 or 4 years ago when the University of Wyoming Foundation, which invests in equities, found itself where its corpus, its fair market value, was less than the cash that had been contributed because they weren't invoking a strong spending policy. The point of this is that it is a long-term investment policy that you have to stick with. And you don't abandon the policy on a good year when you have good capital gains. You stick with it. If you stick with it, your corpus will grow, your revenues will stay constant at the 5%, and you will have a plan that sticks with it. But when we start saying, well, gee, times are tough, or maybe we won't be able to do it, it's sort of like the spendthrift child that says, even though I've got all this money, there's still more I want, and I want to go against the settlors, if you will, the person who set up the trust, advice with respect to the spending policy. This is a long-term policy, not set from year to year, but set for the next 100 years, 200 years, long beyond that. And good management is that we don't vary it from year to year. And finally, folks, these are not tough times. There's no purpose to create more money available for spending. It's just not needed. The policy has been proven. The Harvard Trust was the gold standard. I urge you to stick with those statutory policies that we set, which is what we promised folks that we would do when they authorized and we set the policy to invest higher in equities. I urge you to defeat the amendment.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Senator Mockler.
Mr. President, you know, I would love to get in a really long debate with the senator from Albany County. When we first set up the spending policy, we were going to ratchet it down from taking about 8 or 9% and then slowly moving it down to 5%. We actually started to boom, and so we went directly to 5% and met our spending policy goals pretty much immediately. And so that money was able to beat our total spending policy much more quickly, inflation-proofing the account. It was a spending policy and a philosophy taken off of private endowments. Yale had the most incredible one. Harvard had a good one. So we were looking at it as an endowment that's done in the private sector. But then we deviated quite a bit. Instead of just relying on what was the endowment model, we started to put direct money into the trust fund because we had more money to put into the trust fund. So we started double inflation proofing it. And that wasn't a bad thing. It was bad for you all. It wasn't too happy a time for me. But it did double inflation proof it. And then we started putting an additional percentage into the trust fund. And the trust fund grew. And then this year we swept out some of the capital gains so we could use them. Unfortunately, some other things grew faster, and the value of money in our trust fund was not worth as much as had we put them onto our highways, had we put them into building our schools. Those inflation rates escalated far quicker than the money we made in the permanent mental trust fund, and a range of time that was going to take to have them come out was far more significant to the highways and to the infrastructure of our state than what we were going to make in the trust fund. So I think what you have to consider is the time value of money. And money is really what we're all about. If you can't get that money onto these highways, then that is going to cost you 20 or 25% more. 3 years ago, it was $1 million a mile to build a highway. Now it's $3.5 million to build a highway. And that money that could have done it is sitting in a trust fund making 5 or 6 or maybe 7 or 8%. And it depends, again, on the year. So which was your better deal? When you knew both times you had to get that money into the best deal for the people of Wyoming. It's great to save for the future, but not at the expense of the present.
Question is on third reading amendment number 21. Would the chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson?
Aye.
Allman?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case? Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Fecht?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Job?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Larson?
No.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer. Mockler.
Aye.
Nicholas.
No.
Perkins.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Ross.
No.
Scott.
No.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
No.
Basie.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Schiffer.
No.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 11 ayes, 19 noes.
Third reading amendment number 21 has failed to pass the Senate. Third reading amendment number 22, the Meyer Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 22, budget affected. Section 303, employee benefits, after page 83, after line 20.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment 22 to Senate File 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. Mr. President, this goes into the state contribution for a match on the deferred compensation plan for each qualifying employee on a dollar-for-dollar basis. Currently, we provide a $20 state match on a 50% basis, and an employee can come up with a $20 match. This requests another $10 a month match. That would cost us approximately a little over $1 million, $1,033,333 for the next biennium period. The deferred compensation plan is different than a deferred benefit plan. Our deferred benefit plan, as we well know, is slipping a little bit. We can't do our COLAs. And this is one way to allow the employees to participate themselves in the possibility that and the potential that in the future they'll have something there when they retire to help pay for some of those either cost of living associated expenses or health care benefits or other things that may occur during retirement. State doesn't put all of it in. As most of you know, that the defined benefit plan, the agencies are actually picking up both shares, both the employee and the employer share. That may not occur forever, but this is very clear that in order to play in this game, the employee has to come up and pony up with some money. So, Mr. President, with that explanation, I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Senator Cope.
Mr. President, a question, I guess, of the Appropriations Committee. I mean, here we are talking about, in a budget amendment, a compensation plan for state employees. I guess my question is, was this issue discussed when you met, and why wasn't it maybe in the budget if it was such a good idea? Secondly, I know that counties, I know people up in my county, not only do they get 11.5% paid by the county, their share for the state retirement, they have a deferred comp plan. I don't know of any counties that pay anything towards it for them. My understanding is that all the employees that choose to participate in the deferred comp plan at the county level pay for all that themselves. So I guess I'd like to hear from the Appropriations Committee why we're sitting here with a third reading amendment on the budget bill on a major, major compensation proposal. Did it come up in front of you before?
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment, this did not come up in the appropriation process. And folks, remember what we did do this year. We have appropriated 1% of everybody's salary that is going to go into an account that eventually will be utilized to fund some sort of health care retirement assistance sometime in the game. Now, it may be, I meant not in the game, but in sometime in the future, excuse me, and it may be that when we begin to look at how we do that, we decide that some sort of deferred compensation program is the way to go, to where we say, well, take that 1%, we'll contribute it if you contribute 1% creating a instead of a defined benefit program, a defined contribution program. That's all discussion that the interim study is going to investigate. But in light of the very generous appropriation of 1% that will ultimately benefit state employees, I'd urge that you reject this.
Further discussion? Further discussion before the sponsor takes his second shot. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, to answer the question directly about how did this come about on third reading, a good representative that happens to be on the retirement liaison from the House asked me to think about this and bring it to the floor to discuss it as a possibility of mitigating some of the problems that we know are occurring. And that's the 1% COLA rather than the 3%. I think it was his opinion, and I think definitely mine, that the employees ought to have some skin in the game. And I think that's why this isn't going to solve the whole problem by any way, shape, or means. It's a very, very small part of the whole process. It's the retirement thing is over a $6 billion fund. This is $1 million a biennium, $500,000 a year. So it brings an option to the employee if they want to help themselves. I can't speak directly to the local governments as to whether they offer that opportunity to their employees or not. I'm not privileged. I certainly believe that what you said to the floor has got to be the truth, that maybe the local government isn't quite as generous as the state. In many cases, I think they probably aren't. I think the state's got a pretty good plan. But I wanted to bring it to the body's attention that we do have a problem. This could possibly be a solution to it. I think I know where this one is going. And so to save a little bit of time for the floor, and it is the 3:30 rule, so we'll withdraw this one at this time, Mr. President. Save us a little time.
Hearing no objection, third reading amendment number 22 is withdrawn.
Huh?
Third reading amendment number 29, the Peterson Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 29, Budget Section 320, Local Government Distribution, page 102, line 6.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move that third reading amendment number 29 to Senate File 1. And ask for the body's favorable consideration. This amendment basically is, if I've learned anything in the short 3 years that I've sat in this seat, it's that we need to get our legislative intent correct in the bills that we pass. As you look at your chart on this funding formula for direct distribution, the first silo is entitled Underfunded Large Projects. That's referring to the $33.4 million. But actually in the bill itself, on page 102, line 6, that silo is labeled unfunded large capital projects. Now, there's a big difference there. I think the intent of this direct distribution formula is to allow cities, towns, and counties to be able to come to SLIB with partial funds. In other words, using a portion of their direct distribution, a portion of the county consent grants, and coming to SLIB and saying, you know, we're still $40,000 short on our water project. This wording would allow that to happen. If it stands as now, the only things that we can fund under this silo is the unfunded projects. And so I would urge your support on this amendment.
Discussion? Discussion. The question is on third reading amendment number 29. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Third reading amendment number 29 has carried. Mr. Vice President.
Third reading amendment number 24. The reading clerk, please read the amendment.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 24, budget addition to 300, section page 117 after line 21.
Mr. President.
Mr. Vice President, I move third reading amendment number 24 to Senate File 1 and ask the reading clerk to dispense with further reading of the amendment. Mr. President, this goes back to the elected officials' incidental expense. You recall we made an appropriation to allow them to access money very similar to what we in the Senate have, $750 per elected official per quarter. Unfortunately, I got my text messaging machine out, and I was working on it, and I couldn't quite get it all to hook up. And so when I beamed the number back to the LSO office, it came out the wrong number. I apologize. My math has never been very good. Instead of $15,000, it needs to be $30,000 to make this last through the biennium. I'm embarrassed that I can't add very well, but it still is a good amendment, and I hope you'll support it.
Questions? Further discussion? Seeing none, the question is third reading amendment 24. The chief clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Allman? Bebout? Burns? Case? Case? Coe? Cooper? DeCaria? Becht? Geis? Hastert? Hines? Jennings? Job? Johnson? Landon? Larson? Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Mockler?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
Aye.
Vasey?
Aye.
Bonflatern?
Aye.
President Schiffer?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 27 ayes, 3 noes.
By your vote, third reading amendment 24 has passed the Senate. Next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 25. The reading clerk will please read the amendment.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 25, budget addition to 300 section, page 117 after line 21.
Senator Von Flatter.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. I move amendment number 25 to Senate File, third reading amendment 25 to Senate File 1, and ask that we dispense with further reading. Fellow Senators, it is the 330 rule, and I'll try to get through 2.5 pages or almost 3 full pages of an amendment. Ever since my short tenure in this, or during my short tenure in this body, we have had long discussions and a lot of time spent on community colleges. And last interim, we made an attempt, and I was part of that task force set up by the governor, though, and for many reasons, and maybe where that task force was parked, we didn't get very far. We made a lot of recommendations, did a lot of research. We've got some good minutes from meetings, and we have a lot of good testimony. But a lot of what we recommended and what we discussed never came forth. And this is finally an attempt that this body, and with cooperation of the other body and some outside entities, are going to get together and look hard at community colleges and get them united, we hope, in one voice when they come to us. So they, when they make their request, they make it under through that one party, and it's unified through the 7 community colleges we presently have. So set doing that, this amendment goes to Community College Task Force Planning Study. It names the legislators that will participate. It names the outside non-legislators that will participate, and they are appointed by the governors. And there's a list there for you to go through. And then it talks about on page 2, starting with B, shall review and evaluate. And the big items there I'll point to is line 24 on page 2, create a system which evaluates and prioritizes community college capital construction. We've had only one minor discussion today, but a very lengthy one yesterday. And I know other parts of the legislature have had long discussions. And then on line 40, it says, explore a statewide community college system with respect to governance, revenue generation, and representation on the commission. And I can tell you from a county that does not participate in that revenue generation directly to the community colleges, this is something we need to settle. And we need participation. And we've all used the argument that the community colleges are a statewide system. So let's settle it. In this interim, at least let's put the model in place that we may, no doubt, have to tweak over the next year or two. And on to the final page where it talks about the scheduling, what we'll do, the payment for the task force members, and then there is, Mr. Vice President, line 33 of page 3, an appropriation LSO to effectively, and also the reporting is on page 3, who this task force will report to, and then who shall bring forth the legislation from the recommendations of the task force. And then on line 33, you get into the appropriation to pay for the expense of this task force, and hopefully building upon what was done during the last interim and reviewing what that group did and taking new testimony and having an actual goal when we start, which I can tell you was one of the problems we had last time. We took in all the information and just said how, you know, of course, how wonderful everybody is in the community college system, because that's all we asked them to do. What do you do? And, of course, we got the sunny side of everything. And they are. The community colleges are a great asset of this state. We just need to get them together so we, every year, spend as little time as possible discussing their needs and funding them correctly and having everybody participate. I ask for your affirmative vote for this amendment, and I stand for questions.
Thank you, Senator Coe.
President, in support of the amendment, I just can't tell you how strongly I feel that we need to do something. In the interim, I was so frustrated. The task force worked hard, but nothing just really came of it. You know, if you remember what happened last year, we had a bill like this that was structured that originated in the Senate that would have created a task force that would have had a look at community colleges from the outside in, not from the inside out, see what their role should be in the expansion of the economy in the state of Wyoming. And that thing got messed up down the hall here. You know, the House got to mucking with it and basically screwed it up. So we just didn't bring the bill forward. So the governor appointed a task force that went out and worked hard, but it just didn't work. We have too much at stake here with community colleges not to do something now. I've got a bill parked in education that we were going to bring forward, a joint committee bill that everybody got to fussing about. They weren't on the same page. This president was over here. This president was over here. Somehow we've got to bring this into unity. All seven community colleges have to come into unity. If we're going to fund them to the tune of $270 million, I think the number I saw, something like that, somehow they have to get all on the same page, come with one message to us. This is the way. The last thing I wanted to see was another task force, because I'm probably going to be involved in it. We got to do this. This is really important.
Mr. President.
Mr. Vice President, I too urge the Senate to vote in favor of this amendment. I commend its authors. We really do need to do something. We've got a wonderful asset out there, and what it's doing is it's tearing itself apart. And it's too good a thing to let it destroy itself from within. It truly is. It's got some tremendous strengths, but I would suggest to you that it needs to have someone come in and provide some leadership, provide some direction, and say, let's get back on course. Let's start providing for the entire state. Because this is the traditional student population, non-traditional, things that we know don't normally even think of as arts, community events and those kind of things. But it is also workforce. It is also advancement in terms of careers. All those things that we're trying to get accomplished, and they're just flying apart they're just flying many, many different directions. And it's just too valuable to let that happen. So I urge your support for this amendment.
Senator Vasey.
Vice President, rising in opposition to this amendment, I'm thrilled to see that task forces are back in vogue. Last year they had a little hiatus, but we're going. My first term in the legislature, I somehow was appointed to the Management Audit Committee. And you know what we were studying? A task force on community colleges. We all know what we have to do about community colleges. In our hearts, we know. And we can give it, we can push it off to tourism, everybody else, but we know. And I think we'll spend another lovely summer, but I guarantee you we won't be any closer to fixing community colleges.
Further discussion? Seeing none, the question before us is third reading amendment number 25. The chief clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Allman?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
No.
Vecht?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
Aye.
Job?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Mockler?
No.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
Aye.
Basie?
No.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Schiffer?
Aye.
Case I to know. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 23 ayes, 7 noes.
By your vote, third reading amendment 25 has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Vice President, I move that the Senate be at ease for 10 minutes.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye. All those opposed?
No, we want
10 minutes. Motion carries.
Jerry, you want to be on this task force?
What?
What, do we just load it up?
Have any more task forces after
that? Put me on. I don't care.
No.
You
know,
I'll
that's
say what I say.
Another waste of money.
You know how long we've been doing this thing?
Put task force. Jumped right on this one.
I did.
I know you did. Just
know
one
you
more
did.
Time.
But what the hell?
Did the Education Committee even do it?
That's what I thought.
Tourism industry. Really gas in
that's what we got these committees for. Make decisions.
I mean, kidding. Oh, I mean,
and then who's going to chair up the same entire Education Committee chairman?
And we know what we have to do. We have to get our guts and say we're going to form this system.
And everybody's going to get their ass taxed.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the highest.
Senate will please come back to order. We are back on the budget bill. Third reading amendment number 26, the Job Hastert Cooper co-amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate file 1, third reading amendment number 26, section under consideration, addition to 300 sections. Delete the Hastert amendment.
Senator Job.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 26 to Senate file 1 and ask for a positive vote. Mr. President, this looks very familiar because it's in regards to the Bitter Creek project in Rock Springs. And we passed this amendment on second reading. Since that time, since that time, the Sweetwater delegation has been working with the director of DEQ, and it seems there's a more appropriate source of funds for this program. And all this does is, I'm not bringing this to open up the merits or the need for the project. It's simply to change the source of funding. And the source of funding would be from unencumbered and unobligated funds in some non-coal projects. And, Mr. President, that's about the only change, and I would ask for a favorable vote.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. In honor and support of the amendment, the last amendment, what happened was we earmarked $30 million, or this $4.5 million out of the $30 million of ongoing reclamation obligations. What we've learned is that our agreement with OSM is those dollars have to be applied to what they would call Tier 1 or Priority 1 projects. In addition, there were already projects teed up for that $30 million. What this does is says, to the extent that there are reversions, unused dollars from prior projects that are going to be completed, that you could sweep those dollars and utilize them for this project. So it will not interfere with the obligation that we have for the $30 million. It's not a guarantee that the money will be there. It's not a guarantee. It's not a promise we'll use AML dollars. What it says is, in the event that there are unused dollars from prior projects, it will be applied to this purpose.
Question being called for. Third reading amendment number the question is on third reading amendment number 26. All those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Third reading amendment number 26 passes unanimously. Third reading amendment number 27, the Meyer Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read the amendment?
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 27, budget addition to 300 section, page 117 after line 21.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 27 to Senate File 1 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. And first, Mr. President, I want to apologize to the body because this is a in our terminology, it is a piggyback, and I want to apologize to the body, but the need for this particular issue has been, I think, brought out quite forcefully to myself and my colleague down the hall, and we've had a lot of, buy-in about the problems of railroad quiet zones across the state. So we want to make sure that we do address it during this budget session, and I beg the body for indulgence in your consideration. Mr. President, what this does is essentially appropriate $1 million. It goes into an account. It allows the Transportation Commission to establish a priority ranking system for quiet zones and wayside horns. And it also provides for a match based on the three different levels of match, 25% for the for the seven poorest counties, 50% for the middle eight, and 75% for the counties which are more able to afford the wayside horns or the quiet zones. A little bit of information on what a quiet zone is. Quiet zone basically is where two crossing arms or four crossing arms come down and there's no passing and there's no need for a horn. Then you have one arm and you have a curb so people can't go around the arms. A wayside horn is a directed horn up and down the lane of traffic so it doesn't go all over town. We're getting a lot of double and triple tracking, and we're getting just an extraordinary amount of train traffic. Another way I could have handled this was through the impact bill that we had here earlier, was to broaden out the counties which were eligible for impacts. However, I felt that that would not be germane to that bill, and I didn't want to jeopardize that bill in any way. It needed to go forward. I think this is a reasonable start in this direction, and I would hope for your favorable consideration, because there's all over this state with the railroad trains and the coal traffic, we're getting a problem with just the noise pollution that's going on. You can imagine if you have four or five crossings in a town and a train every 15 minutes in the middle of the night, it gets a little bit tough. Well, I guess you don't have to imagine. I think that happened out here the other night. So, Mr. President, for your any questions, please try to answer them.
Discussion on it. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against this amendment, folks. You're right, these kinds of problems are happening all across the state. In one issue, it may be the sound of trains. In another community, it may want to build an arterial across a train tracks, and the community's got to find the way to pay the cost. We've got at least in Albany County, I could think, two or three areas where the county commissioners would like to reconstruct facilities in and around the railroad main lines, and it is expensive. And every community has unique problems. But we're putting $350 million through a formula that we're going to talk about here in a moment. And what we're saying here is that those communities that happen to have this impact, this particular impact, we're going to give them a bonus so they can use their impact for things, for the less important things. If this is the highest priority, then that warrants utilizing the $350 million that we're going to get. And if you look at these communities on the next, as we come up, they are all going to receive substantial dollars. And if we're going to now go and say, well, my impact is bigger than your impact, this is $1 million that belongs in the total dollars going out to local communities, I urge you to oppose the amendment.
Discussion. Senator Von Feder.
Thank you, Mr. President. Standing on and against this amendment, I have to agree, unusually so, with the good senator from Albany County. I put my name onto a quiet zone bill or something similar, believing that the impacts of one particular area of the state are directly related to the impacts for mineral development. So the funds that are coming to our state have impacted a county that doesn't really get a chance to look at or receive funds directly for impact. But yet this opens it up, and I think Albany, the city of Laramie, Rock Springs, Rollins, all have a good argument as to why they should also be funded in here for non-energy trains, non-impacted that way. That's part of their local industry. I don't want to open it up, so I disagree with this bill because it does open it up so wide. And it unfairly also, by the way, compensates certain communities. And I do believe that we are fairly compensating or attempting to compensate those financially challenged counties, towns, and cities, and impacted ones, too, through other funding sources. I ask for your defeat of this amendment.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I, too, signed on to the original bill, and I would have to say that the previous comments would be a direct reflection of my position as well.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, I was going to ask more of a question, because this issue have came up in my community, and I haven't followed it that close. But I'm under the impression that there's a federal law that requires the communities or the trains to blow at certain crossings. And there is a procedure that a community can do to alleviate this. And I don't know what you do, but I was wondering if the sponsor was aware of this and whether you have looked into it.
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. President, I will say I'm torn on this amendment. I always admire a creative piggyback attempt. But I would have a serious question here. I know there is a procedure where communities can do one of these quiet zones, and it has been done in some places. And I saw at least in the press at one point a report that there'd been a study that showed there was a real safety issue with that, and they were having more grade crossing accidents in consequence. And I wonder if, Mr. President, I would really like to ask a chairman of a committee who had dealt with this bill what the testimony had been, but I guess I'll have to settle for asking the sponsor what he knows about that.
Further discussion on third reading amendment number 27? Before the sponsor takes his second shot. Senator Meyer, do you want to respond?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, let's go directly to some of the criticisms here, and I think partly a misunderstanding from the two fine senators who actually signed on the Railroad Quiet Zone bill. This doesn't limit it to energy related circumstances. Energy related circumstances, as far as coal trains, is certainly one of the things that is a problem because of the volume. But we don't have coal trains going up and down the UP corridor, and it would not limit it to the UP corridor. But there was no limitation there. In fact, the language is virtually the same in this bill. I mean, in this bill, as what we were signed on to. So as far as the federal requirement of blowing at crossings and what you can do, that there is a requirement for locomotives to blow their horn at a crossing for a set amount of time and a set distance. And the railroads certainly do that for a safety reason. And there is a procedure to apply for a railroad quiet zone, and it's primarily to keep the railroads from having a liability issue that you sign off on this and do this to the right specifications, then that liability issue doesn't transfer onto the railroads, and this is the way that the railroad quiet zones are put together. So, Mr. President, that, I think, answered the questions. Was there, I don't recall if there was another one from the good senator from Natrona County or not. Safety? I'm not exactly sure what the safety issue that the good senator from Natrona County is questioning. I know the liability issue, the safety issue. Basically, if you have a quiet zone, you can't have the cars that have to be physically blocked from crossing the tracks, either through a double crossing arm or through single crossing arms, and a curb that will not allow them to cross over to the other lane of traffic and go around the crossing arms. So that's a safety issue there. If you have a wayside horn, it's directed right down the lane of the traffic. So, Mr. President, that does explain it. I hope and really indulge the body that we can get by the piggyback issue. Sometimes there's something that you just have to consider and as far as the $350 million Mr. President, you know, that is a lot of money, but I don't believe anybody is getting an unfair shake on this. The Transportation Commission is going to make the call on this and set up the rules and regulations. So it's a fair enough shot to everyone.
The question is on third reading amendment number 27. Would the chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson? No. Allman?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
DeCaria?
No.
Vecht?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Job?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Larson?
No.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Mockler?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Scott?
No.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend?
No.
Basie?
No.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Schiffer?
No.
Closing vote closed. 5 ayes, 25 noes.
Third reading amendment number 27 has failed to pass the Senate. Third reading amendment number 28, the Meyer amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 28, addition to the 300 section. Delete the Meyer third reading amendment.
Senator Meyer.
Well, Mr. President, to get a...
I'll say it.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Senator Nicholas, would you like
Mr. to... Mr. President, I'll explain it. The first one was a match. The second one was pay it all. And I know that when he put the first one in, he thought, I'm going to win this, and maybe I'll get the next one. So I guess if you really like the match, maybe you didn't like it, maybe you'll like the one where you pay it all.
Mr. President, I'll withdraw this amendment at this time.
Hearing no objection, number 28 is withdrawn. Third reading amendment number 5, the Massey amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 5, budget additions to 300 sections, page 117 after line 21.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 5 to Senate File 1. I think later on tonight, I and perhaps some other folks are going to be going out to a function here in town where we're going to recognize some of Wyoming's homebred talent, especially with regard to the arts in the state. And they have this annual tradition of holding this banquet while we're here in town so that they can highlight the wonderful talent that we have around the state of Wyoming with regard to our arts and culture. Whether it's the fire ants up in Buffalo or the cowboy poets over in Sheridan, the sculptors in Cody, the orchestra over in Jackson, or the archaeologist over in Laramie, we have a great deal of talent in the state of Wyoming. I sent out a handout about 10 or 15 minutes ago that's at your desk. And it's the grants that our Wyoming Cultural Trust Fund has issued over the last year and a half. And this demonstrates the depth of talent that we have in our communities with regard to arts and history and in the humanities. Sometimes we'll go out of state to bring in an exhibit so that we have an idea of what goes on outside of our borders. That's very important to us. But for the most part, when you look at these grants, it's a way of highlighting the talent that we have right here in the state of Wyoming. Now, back to my old days over there in the House, we started the Cultural Trust Fund. We started this trust fund in 1998, but really didn't put any money into it. We were hoping that it would be raised with some private funding, and it never really happened. Thanks to the efforts of our president here in the Senate, as well as some other folks, we started putting some money into this trust fund in 2005. And just like the Wyoming Wildlife Trust Fund and some of the other ones that we have, whenever we have a chance, we put a little bit more money into that trust fund. And this is the results, or what you see right here on this paper, and the benefits that it's providing to our communities around the state. To give you some hard numbers, Department of State Parks and Cultural Resources has received 94 applications from 16 counties over the last almost 2 years in order to request funding. Because of the limited funding that they do have available, they've only been able to award 52 of them in 12 counties. They want to reach out to many of the other counties. In fact, they want to be a lot more aggressive in promoting these grants throughout the state of Wyoming. But you could go out and get 200 grants, but if you're only able to fund 50 every year, you're going to have a lot of disappointed people. So the aggressiveness that they would employ in getting together grant applications are dependent upon the amount of money that we have in this account. The governor requested an additional $3 million, keeping with the spirit of every biennium, throwing a little bit more money into the account here. The Appropriations Committee recommends in the budget bill $1.5 million. The amendment that I'm bringing to you will put the other $1.5 million back in to go back to the governor's recommendation of $3 million in order to allow this corpus to grow and to provide more of these community-based grants around the state of Wyoming. And the place that the amendment proposes to take the money is from the over-the-cap money that's in the policy spending reserve account, the $1.22 million that's going to go into the permanent mental trust fund by July 1st of this year. So this amendment is proposing to divert $1.5 million of that $122 million from one permanent account to the other, from the permanent mental trust fund, and put the $1.5 million here into this cultural trust fund in order to support these grants. Okay. So for one particular account, an additional $122 million on top of the approximately $700 million that's going to flow into the permanent mental trust fund during the next biennium or so, to $1.5 million, I mean, that's money. But when you compare it to the $800 million there, versus the amount of money that's in this trust fund, I think it will make a bigger difference and have a bigger impact when we put it into this particular account for the cultural events around the state of Wyoming. Thank you.
Further discussion? Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. And on and against the amendment for two reasons. One is that we did fund the cultural trust fund to the tune of $1.5 million. And second, I would urge you to resist the scalping of going into the investment policy that we've just talked about not too long ago, the statutory investment policy, and saying there are other priorities. The investment policy is a statutory commitment. Stick with it, and let's not be invading that. Let's not be using that as the source to pay for some of these other objects or projects.
Further discussion on the amendment? Further discussion before the sponsor takes a second shot. Senator Mass.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. When we're talking about $800 million, I think $1.5 million from that isn't so much a scalping, it's a haircut. Right? And we talk a lot about giving haircuts here on the floor about various things. And it's our discretion. That's the way we set it up. It's interesting how we set up accounts sometime, and we say we're always assured that we have the discretion when we set them up to say if something else comes up, we can always move the money out of it. But when we try to do that, then it almost becomes an inviolate process. We can do it. This amendment is fine. And you know that if you do move the $1.5 million over to this account, you're going to know what kind of benefits the folks around Wyoming are going to be able to see. This is a good trust fund. This is a good program, and it's being managed responsibly. Thank you.
The question is on third reading amendment number 5. Would the chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson? Allman, Bebout, Burns, Case, Coe, Cooper, DeCaria, Becht, Geis, Hastert, Hines, Jennings, Job, Johnson, Landon, Larson, Massey, Meyer, Mockler, Nicholas, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Scott, Sessions, Townsend, Basie, Von Flatern, President Schiffer.
Aye.
Closing vote closed. 11 ayes, 19 noes.
Third reading, amendment number 5 has failed to pass the Senate. Third reading, amendment number 34. With the Nicholas Job amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 1, third reading, amendment number 34. Budget 320, local government distributions, page 101, line 6.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I move third reading amendment number 34 to Senate File 1. This is the, if you look over on page 3, which is the first page that has the spreadsheet, you'll see that it's alternative 3. So we're now speaking of alternative 3. Alternative 3 was the JAC recommendation where we went in and reduced the hardship component by one half. And as a reminder, the alternative 4 is sort of the WHAM hybrid. It's not exactly the hybrid, the WHAM. It can't be because we had to integrate the county, and in addition, we used different amounts. As I explained to you earlier, with where the WHAM had recommended that we take the direct sales tax distribution, that would be the sales tax replacement, and take it all out of the direct block, we split it. So it can't be the WHAM model because we've made modifications to it. In addition to the change where we took one half the hardship, we took $40 million in the alternative 3 and distributed it through the sales tax distribution formula. So once again, the changes from the JAC to alternative 3, really two changes. One, with respect, actually, I apologize, three changes. One, we used the most current county commissioner distribution model, which was the same model we used in this or the last year, whereas the JAC used a two-year-old distribution. The county commissioners liked it better. Second change was that we reduced the hardship component by one half. The third change was that we used the sales tax distribution of $40 million in alternative 3. Now, I'd like to give you some help on trying to evaluate the three alternatives, and it's hard because it's all over the map. It's really, you put something in, things change in ways you'd never really appreciated it. But I would draw your attention to a couple communities as we go through. First, let's look at Goshen County. In JAC, it had the $17 million. In alternative 3, they dropped down to $14 million. Alternative 4, they come up to $14.7 million. Alternative 5, they come up to $15.8 million. So they see a pretty significant change. Look at the city of Laramie County. Under JAC, they were at $49 million. They jump up to $51 million in alternative 3. But in the WHAM hybrid that we're describing, they declined clear down to $46 million. Natrona County is the same way. And I think what's happening on the WAM hybrid is it stretches out the model a little bit, so everybody on the ends, on the extremes, gets more money, and the consequence is that some of the higher population folks have to give up, because there's always a population component within here, and their population benefits them more in the JAC, the Alternative 3, and even Alternative 5. The WAM model hits those big commune or the big population areas. You look at Teton County, they are at 10 million, they jump up to 12 million, and they do relatively the same in Alternative 3 and 4. In many respects, Alternative 3 and 4, if you just go back and look at, take the county block grant out and go back and look at the individual cities, they're pretty close. And more than that, I can't, you know, I can tell you what went in the components if it will help you. I'll stand for questions. But one of the questions was that was asked this morning was, what about the weighted sales tax? There is a weighted sales tax component in the JAC model and Alternative 3, none in Alternative 4, and none in Alternative 5. The weighted sales tax, in essence, takes the per capita collection that you receive on your sales tax, and you take the bottom 20 or so percentage, and you give them a little bit more because their per capita revenues are lower. That was an ingredient of the last biennium. It's not a new concept. It was there. But the principal difference between JA or the Alternative 3 and Alternative 4, remember, is Alternative 3 has the weighted sales tax but lower hardship. Alternative 4 has no weighted sales tax, but higher hardship. And just the way the formulas go, that's sort of the way it breaks down. You have to look at them individually and sort of in a group. And I've been doing this probably, I've been looking for now 6 months, almost a year, trying to figure it out. I haven't figured out the perfect solution for everybody's problems.
Senator Cole.
Mr. President, I'm trying to figure out how the process will go, and I commend the sponsors and the Appropriations Committee for bringing these three proposals to us, and they've got three amendments right in a row, and I'm not quite sure how we're going to work our way through if we want to figure out how to support the next amendment coming, or the third amendment, or if we decide we like the first one, what do we do with the next two? So I'm wondering about the process, Mr. President, as we move forward.
Just so the Senate's very clear, what's in your budget right now is the JAC recommendation. In other words, you've got to, if you decide you want to replace it, you have alternatives. You vote it out and vote another one in. The way we work these amendments primarily is we will go through, as you can see, we have the three amendments in front of you, third reading 34, third reading 35, and third reading 36. The way our process works, we take them one by one. If none of those pass, then the JAC rec stays in the budget. In other words, it's there, and we can replace it, but that is what we're working with. That's the process we have. Before we move on, are there any other questions on the process? Everybody understand what the decision is in front of you? Senator Nicholas.
Mr. President, I've given some thought to that, and it occurs to me that as you're looking at where you're going, we're right at JAC, so the first question is Alternative 3 better than JAC? And you might vote for Alternative 3 thinking that it's better than JAC, or that it's worse. And then, but it'll go up or down. And then if it goes in, you might still vote for alternative four because you think it's even better or even worse. And vice versa all the way down. And you don't know what's going to happen on alternative four, but you might find yourselves voting for more than one amendment because you still think it's better than what we started with.
We are now on third reading amendment number 34. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I understand the train has left the station. That's pretty clear. And I don't know that there's a crossing there because I keep hearing train sirens. But my good friend, the senator from rural Natrona County, said this morning, and I'm going to quote, "Do not make legislative changes in the budget bill." This, all of these very clearly make legislative changes in the budget bill. Because none of these gives you an option of what the law says right now. The sales tax will be distributed by point of collection and not by population. There are no alternatives that incorporate the way the law reads right now. Is that constitutional? Is it legal? Yeah. You can put anything in the budget bill to change laws with the budget bill. You can take your list, go down your favorite county, or go to the favorite counties of most of the members of the appropriation and look. And see what the net result has been of trying to change something, we're down here, that has been unable to be changed by some members of the body in I don't know how many years. And that's whether sales tax, and that's a lot of the crux of this, whether sales tax is going to be distributed by population or by point of collection. And whether it be on this bill, if I run out of time or another one, you're going to have to listen to my speech again. Population sales tax distribution doesn't work. And why? Once again, I'll use my home county, Teton County. We have a population of 18,000-something, have pretty good sales tax collections. But our infrastructure, our sheriff department, our legal system, our roads, our streets, our everything else have to be built and paid for as if our population were 45 to 50,000 so that we can provide the amenities and housing to collect all that sales tax that's distributed throughout the state of Wyoming. Folks, to us, this is a hit. And I understand it's left the station. To others, it's a big help. And we know what counties they are. It's been attempted year after year. But I go back and I say, if we're going to change the law, let's not do it in the budget bill. If you want to change from point of collection to population, then bring a bill to do it. This is being done in the budget bill. It's being done at a detriment to some counties. Obviously, mine is one. There's a lot of money in it this year, and that's one reason we're, you know, that everybody isn't howling. But the fact remains, we are making a budget, a decision to change the sales tax law of the state of Wyoming from the way it's been almost since inception. So it's the process I'm having trouble with. and it's using the budget bill to change the law. I object to that. We've been pretty good over past years of not doing that. None of those no alternative was offered that distributes the sales tax on the basis of where the law says, and that's point of collection. I think it's serious. Pick whatever. I know the train's left the station. I made up my mind which one I want, but I don't like the process.
Further discussion, Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. President, I'm going to agree with everything that the Senator from Teton County just said. And I really don't like the way it has worked this year. We were essentially precluded on second reading. You have a very complicated set of amendments. Frankly, I think so complicated that most of us didn't understand what was going on and why. And we are, there seems to be no way for those of us who feel this way to have an option to express ourselves other than voting no on the budget as a whole, which I hate to do. But it seems that the process has deprived the Senate of the ability to examine all the options fairly, and I think that's very, very unfortunate.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm new to this process and on the JEC, but we have to remember, Senators, that this is hold harmless money, sales tax that would have been generated on food sales. That money is gone. This is an estimation. This 40 point some odd million dollars is an estimation of what would have been generated in that county. But it is not sales tax money or revenue that's been generated on food sales. That's gone. This money is other money that's being redistributed, and it's an estimation. So I think we need to remember that.
Senator Mocker, point of order.
Mr. President, we're sort of having a general discussion right now, which is up to you to decide if that's really what you want to do. And otherwise, we really got to go back to each of them one at a time. I mean, it's legitimate to say whether you think you want this in the budget or not, but there are amendments before the body, and we have to dispose of those amendments, unless those sponsors are going to withdraw them all, which I don't think is an option right now. So I think you bring them forward, we vote on them, and we get to decide whether we've read them and understand them and are comfortable with them, or whether we want to go back to the JAC rec. We're certainly not taking out the JAC rec. So as a point of order, I think, you know, you get to decide, move on, do them in order, or I don't know what else.
Senator Mockler, in case I didn't make that clear earlier, we are on third reading amendment number 34. And the people that have spoken so far are entitled to speak and give their piece. They get their 5 minutes, and then we move on, and it calls for a vote. That's what we do when we're in the Senate, is vote. So we are on, and I prefaced this entire discussion with the pointing out third reading amendment number 34. Senator Meyer. Senator Meyer, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on and I guess to explain the JAC amendment, and hopefully that will draw some, distinction between alternative number 3, a little bit of background for those of you who could not participate in the process about how the process came about. We basically took a lot of testimony from everybody that was interested, the WAM Association, the counties, all those different folks about the different formulas. We talked to the budget office and what they had. They had several formulas about different levels of inverse assessed valuation and different distributions of population. We wanted to try to get a general direction and general feeling about where the select committee was going. It was said to us that they want to try to make it simple, as few as variables as possible, transparent as possible, and to make it so you could move those variables if you wanted to try to get different outcomes. And so that's what we tried to do. There were some formulas, and you know how complicated formulas I love, and I had one that had several variables and put it all down, and at the end of the day, it was less to my county and to some of the poorer counties probably than any of these different alternatives. But it was a very complicated formula, so we looked for a surrogate, something that was simple, that would represent the direction of what the committee wanted to do. And the first thing that the committee said, well, first of all, this is bridge funding. This is where it's going to take us from where we are today to where the select committee is going to take us into the next biennium. So we've got to get through this time period and try to move forward. So the motion was made to say, let's start where we were last year and see where we were last year. And that's what we did. We tried to match the direct distributions as close as we possibly could with what we had during the last bienniums. And so that's what you will see in the JAC models, where you had the direct distributions to municipalities and counties. That's pretty darn close to what everybody has voted on and agreed to at least twice in the last 2 years. And then we wanted to see what the governor had. The governor was very high on the consensus revenue block grants. Myself, I didn't do that much for my counties, but I could understand where the counties like Natrona County and Laramie County, the larger population counties, never had the opportunity to get the SLIP grants. And so we wanted to give them the ability to get those SLIP grants, not SLIP grants, but the consensus revenue grants. And so we put money into the consensus revenue block grant formula. And we use what I would say is the formula that the budget office or the executive branch brought forward to us that had the least impact as far as reverse assessed valuation. And that was 25% inverse assessed valuation to 75% population. And that's called the R6 formula. And you'll see that in the direct block grant, the $200 million here. Well, actually, it's in JAC, I think it's a $220 million. I have a different spreadsheet here. So
1 minute, Senator.
That's basically what we did there. The other thing we wanted to do, and this is very important between SLIB and Alternative 3 and 4, because Alternative 3 and 4 share the same deficiencies, and that is that the food tax that we hold harmless is outside of the main formula. And that means that food tax for every year is going to have an inflation factor on it. You've got that different silo. You're going to come back down in here, and next biennium it'll be $55 million. And the next biennium it'll be $65 or $70 million. You're not going to be able to hold the line. We wanted to put it into the main direct distribution formula, so we could answer the question, are cities, towns, and counties funded adequately, and is it stable? How much direct funding do we have, and is there going to be enough money distributed back to cities, towns, and counties so they can run their business and run their local governments? That's what we wanted to do with the JAC formula.
Time, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. President, I'm not quite sure, first of all, if we had the amendment we're dealing with deals with Alternative 3. I'm not sure we had a motion on to support the amendment. And I think, unless I'm wrong, we found ourselves With all due respect to my good friend over here, I think we were talking about all the alternatives again.
Senator Cole, we did have a motion.
Okay, we did
have
a motion.
Third reading amendment, number 34.
Okay, so I think, Mr. President, I'm saying I think we should limit the discussion at this point in time on that amendment.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. As we look at alternative three, in doing that, I think that it's probably fairly impossible to look at alternative three without some reference to the other alternatives that are out there. And I would just throw this out, that ultimately, if you like the general, if you like the JAC formula, or if you don't like the JAC formula, let me put it this way, if you don't like the JAC formula and you want to move it off the JAC formula, you have to vote and get it off the JAC formula. If you simply look and vote for wherever your county and your municipalities get the most money, the JAC is going to hold the line, because I've gone down here and looked at these, and ultimately, if everybody just votes for how much you get, where you get the most, the JAC formula will stand, because nobody's going to win out on in every formula. So what you have to do is, if you want it off the JAC formula, you better find another alternative you can live with. And if alternative three is that formula, you better vote for alternative three. If you want alternative five or alternative four, you still better vote for three. Otherwise, you're going to be left with the JAC. So, quite frankly, I think there's multiple alternatives out there that we can all live with. The good news is that there's more money here than there probably ever has been before, and so you're not going to go back to your county and get scalped, or your city and get scalped, because there's a lot of money in here, and it's a good distribution. It's a very generous distribution to all entities, regardless of which form you win. But ultimately, if that's what you want, that's how you're going to have to play the game. We're going to have to come to some consensus. Here's to go along in just a few minutes. Otherwise, it'll be the JAC as a default. And I just offer that out and urge your support for alternative three, if that's what you want.
Further discussion? Question being called for. Question is on third reading amendment number 34. Would the chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson?
No.
Allman?
No.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
DeCaria?
No.
Fecht?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hines? Jennings?
Aye.
Job?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Mockler?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
Aye.
Scott?
No.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
No.
Basie?
No.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Schiffer?
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 11 ayes, 19 noes.
Third reading amendment number 34 has failed to pass the Senate. We are now on third reading amendment number 35, the Nicholas Job Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 35. Budget Section 320, Local Government Distributions, page 101, line 6 through 27.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 35 to Senate File 1, and this is a model that we sort of called the WHAM hybrid with the base. With regard to the direct distribution to counties, it has a population base along with a higher percentage for hardship. The county has the formula that they had asked for. The direct block grant has a base of 1.8, and on top of the base is what we call the inverse ratio. Using sales tax distribution of $40 million is what we call the Department of Revenue Hold Harmless Food Tax methodology.
Further discussion? Senator Bebe.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I think I'm going to vote against this one, but I'm trying to figure it out. If you look at the state, and maybe a little more discussion about this inverse assessed valuation and how that relates to per capita. I can understand the per capita. Then you roll in the flat distribution, and I'm just having trouble seeing how that really affects. I mean, I can look at the sheet like everybody else, but could you give a little more discussion on that and why you came up with those percentages? It seems to me that inverse assessed valuation, if you really look at the state and the inconsistencies there, you maybe want to raise that and lower the per capita.
Further discussion, Senator Job.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll try to muddy the waters here a little bit. The per capita and the inverse ratio came to us in a formula that was developed out of the state's budget office. They developed several that they brought to JAC. And that 25% of the money on the inverse ratio is, again, pushing money to hardship counties or the poorer counties. I mean, basically, that's the whole purpose of that. You can monkey with that split in percentages, but I can tell you, after working on this stuff for about a month, living and breathing it, you tweak here and there, and you just shift the whole pot. It's like what we used to do in K-12 education. There was only one pot, and when you shift it one way, it comes from somebody else. And so you can do that there. It seems to have gained some support, and I would tell you, in this hybrid model, the city's distribution method is here, and the majority of the municipalities were in favor of that. This is work that came to us from outside JAC. And the county's distribution methods are here, and the county commissioners just finished working that out in the last couple of days. So there's probably support for your counties for the county distribution model and the county block grant here, and there's probably support from your municipalities. Most of the municipalities and the counties know that we've got rich counties and poor counties, and that sometimes the richer ones have to give a little and let the poor counties get something out of this. And all counties get something through this model. So when the counties came to us, again, in that direct block grant, they gave 1% to every county so that there would be enough money. That's about $2 million. To do something significant. And then on top of that is this formula that 75% per capita and then the 25% on the inverse ratio on property valuation. So I know that probably muddies the water. And just a comment, I think if JAC or my co-sponsor and I could have figured this out, you would have some magic formula in front of you. But that right now eludes all of us, and we have taxed our staff. And all I can tell you is that what we're doing now will last until the select committee comes up with, hopefully, the magical formula that is fair and equitable to everyone.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I suspect I'm not the only one trying to struggle to figure out what's best for my county and my cities and my district and so forth and so on. And in part of trying to understand this, I'm looking at, and I'm hoping somebody can help me out, but the ranking member of the JAC mentioned the commissioners, the county commissioners and so forth, and in their literature they sent to us, there's reference to the JAC R6, and I was wondering if they could clarify. Somebody on JAC can clarify to us what the JAC R6 is.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, the JAC R6 formula is that formula in which there's a 75% weighted per capita distribution and a 25% inverse assessed valuation per capita weighted distribution. So of the dollars that are in that silo, and let's draw alternative four here real quick. There are $200 million in the direct block grant CTC. That $200 million, 75% is per capita and 25% is the inverse assessed valuation per capita. And how that works is that you have your S valuation, you flip the thing over, that's going to give you a multiplier, and with that, it's several times that the lower your assessed valuation, basically, the more money you're going to get, and of that $50 million out of that $200 that's split up. And the rest of it is just how many people you have in your county or in your town, or actually in your whole county, that's what you get. And so that's the only part that is distributed by the R6. It's a formula that was developed by the governor's office to the budget office, this is this particular one is from the governor was the lowest percentage. It should also be noted that the counties did have a meeting and that they did vote unanimously. But it's my understanding that the WAM formula was voted by the board of directors. And Bill is shaking his head, but I can tell you that it wasn't a unanimous vote in all cases as far as the WAM distribution formula. So there is a little bit of difference there. It might maybe called a consensus formula, but it can't be called a unanimous formula from that perspective. Well, my time is up here, Mr. Chairman. I will say that this, too, has the deficiency that I would like to try to stay away from, and I would hope that most people would agree that I'd like to get the hold harmless provision rolled into the whole block grant formula that we're putting forth here, or it could be problematic in the future.
Senator Bivak.
Thank you, Mr. President. And for my second time, as I look at this, and maybe I'm getting it all wrong, but the counties with the highest assessed valuation seem to benefit by this relative to the communities that have the most trouble raising money locally. And if I'm wrong, would someone please correct me?
Further discussion. Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And as I look at this, there's just a question I need to reconcile in my mind. I understand, I know fully that we're on Amendment 35, and that refers to Alternative 4. Although I did sign for the distribution of the Wyoming County Commissioner's endorsement of the JAC proposal that occurs in the budget as it is now in the budget bill. Question goes back to what the Senator from Sheridan asked in regard to the R6. And as I understand it, R6 appears, or that portion of the formula was used in the computation in Option 4 in the 35th Amendment that we're looking at here, as well as the original JAC formula that appears in the budget. So you've used that in both places, and that answers my question. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, just a point of absolute clarification. I don't see where it actually says, but this Amendment 35 is Alternative 4. Is that correct? Or is it Alternative 5? Or where?
4.
My understanding was 4, but I don't think that was a direct statement at any time. This is for Alternative 4. Is that correct? That's my only question.
Further discussion. Senator Coe. Further discussion. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you. This is Amendment 35 is for the adoption of Alternative 4. And for the Senator of Fremont County, what you're observing is that both the JAC recommendation and the Alternative 3 have a higher weighting in all of the formulations based upon your sales tax or the amount you collect towards the average. So if you have lower sales tax collection, you get a boost. If you have lower assessed valuation, you get a boost. The WAM model tends to drive more on population. So where you would have gotten more hardship, you get less hardship, more population. And that's really the principle where you're seeing the all formulas have R6 in them. R6 is the inverse distribution for the block grant based upon county assessed valuation. And except that in this alternative four, there's a $1.8 million per county base. And then everything above it is distributed by R4, and that's the block grant. It may not be that property is what reflects whether a city is poor or not, but it is true that it is a good proxy of everybody's wealth. And they all have a component of that.
Question being called for. The question is, on third reading amendment number 35, would the chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson?
No.
Allman?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Becht?
No.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert? Hines,
aye.
Jennings,
no.
Job,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon, Larson,
aye.
Massey,
no.
Meyer,
no.
Mockler,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
no.
Ross,
no.
Scott,
no.
Sessions,
no.
Townsend,
yes.
Basie,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Schiffer.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 15 ayes, 15 noes.
Third reading amendment number 35 has failed to pass the Senate, but we're getting closer. Third reading amendment number 36. Would the reading clerk please read the amendment?
Senate File 1, Third Reading Amendment Number 36, Budget Section 320, Local Government Distribution, page 101, lines 6 through 27.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move Third Reading Amendment Number 35 to Senate File 3 and ask for your favorable consideration. Mr. President, I'll go through this and explain it. It doesn't have the one deficiency which...
Senator Meyer?
Yes.
The amendment we're on is third reading amendment number 36.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. President. Third reading amendment number 30. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 36 to Senate File 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. Thank you. Mr. President, I went directly into the JAC formula, Mr. President, and did just two things. And one thing, I knew the outcome, and I knew what was going to happen. I moved the per capita and the inverse assessed valuation ratios. Rather than 75, I went to 80, and rather than 25, I went to 20. I knew that was going to drive some of the money away from the poorer counties and into the richer counties. There was a little bit of concern, I think, from some of the richer counties that maybe they were getting the short end of things. I do want to draw your attention to this one handout. It looks like this. If you have it, this will kind of put things in perspective. This basically has a comparison between Casper, Cheyenne, Gillette, and Laramie. It tells you the per capita collections and the general purpose tax, whether there's a lodging tax, a property tax, a total tax, and the loss of income to the cities if they're going to be forced to live under Laramie's revenue. And you can see at Casper would lose $6 million, Cheyenne a little over $2 million, and Gillette would lose a little over $16 million. Same thing with the counties, roughly the same outcomes. On the back page, you will see a ranking of counties from the lowest assessed valuation to the highest assessed valuation. And so this is basically what we were dealing with and what we were trying to address. You can see Goshen County at 98 assessed valuation and another county at 8,921 per capita. So there's quite a bit of range. But I knew I was going to take money out of Goshen County and put it in the Sublette County with that particular part of the amendment. But I wanted to give a little bit more to the cities from the standpoint that the community block grant, I felt the counties would have a little bit more control over that, put a little more direct distribution into the cities, basically because of the food tax factor. But what I didn't know when I did that I was going to take money from Teton County because of the population difference. And I tried to put some money up there in the Tetons, but I couldn't quite get it done. That's how complicated this formula is. I didn't know I had inadvertently not held Teton harmless, and my gosh, I apologize. I apologize for not getting that done. But Mr. President, this is what this particular formula does. I think there's some deficiencies in there. But we don't have enough water. I think money for county roads. I'd love to have had a silo and time to put that in. Hopefully they can get it out of the community development block grant. But, Mr. President, this kind of splits it from the JAC model and twinks it for most people a little bit. I'm not sure if I can support it myself, even though I'm bringing it, but I thought everybody ought to have the option. So, you know, we'll go from there.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. And just quickly, speaking on the Amendment 36, Alternative 5, speaking on that amendment, I would urge you to vote no. And the reason that I'm speaking on the amendment, I'm also speaking on the bill, Senate File 1, which contains another alternative that we need to examine, and that appears then in this handout that I've given you in regard to the endorsement of Senate File 1 as it stands. And just for clarification, in regard to what position this really is, and this comes from a question earlier, if you look at the first two sentences, it says that the memo outlines the position of the WCCA members on the formula for distribution, the funding recommended for local governments by JAC. That's then the formula that is in the budget as it is now. And so, again, I would encourage you to vote no on Amendment 36, Option 5, in order to leave what I've just described as a final option. Thank you.
Senator Jobe.
I just want to make a point. In this letter from the county commissioners, they say we're all in this together. I can tell you if this goes down and the JAC model prevails, which it looks like it probably will, they're not in all of that together. Unfortunately, the JAC is heavily weighted toward hardship counties. And so they are not all in it together in that formula. So I just want to make that point, that there's a contradiction here. They have a point about how they want the sales tax distributed. But in the JAC, there are several hardship components in all of those formulas that push the money heavily toward one side. Thank you.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. President, just wanted to bring a point that as I've gone through and poured over these papers and the amounts, and just speaking specifically with total amounts that went to county. So if you take each county and you add up all the amount that from every municipality and the county, and so what they get in the total package, and this is provided to you on a on this handout that was provided from the JAC that lists all of the JAC and then the alternatives one, or the JAC alternative, alternative three, and alternative four. And just tracking down there, and I did some weight, and I went and looked and marked down, just looking at the amount that each county would get. And we're just down to bare knuckles, groveling over money now. So we might as well take off the gloves. And just rating those about whether it's one, two, three. I just wanted to point out a couple things on alternative five. For Albany County, they get more out of alternative five than any other as a combined whole. Bighorn County is their third, but it's very, very close. There's only a few hundred thousand dollars different there. This is Campbell County's number three option, but their amount, actually, their number three option, but it's not a whole lot of difference between any of the others. Carbon County would be their number one option. Fremont County would be their number one option as for amounts in total. Goshen would be their number two option. Laramie County would be their number two option as a, for a county as a total. Lincoln County would be their number two. Natrona County would be their number one. Park County would be their number two option for totals. Sweetwater County would be their number two option for totals. Uinta County would be their number three. There, again, there's not a whole lot of difference for much on Uinta County as you go across there, so it's kind of six, one half a dozen other for them. The losers in that are, there's Teton County's a pretty big loser in that one. Johnson County, there's not a whole lot of difference in Johnson County. They already lost one. They missed alternative four. Hot Springs County is their lowest one as well. But I mean, if you just look at that, I mean, that's, it's split, and you've seen what's, as it's gone through here, as we've all kind of groveled over this, ultimately we've gone back to the default in JAC, and I don't know if that's your intent. If it is, that's fine. But I just wanted to bring that to the attention that, when you look at these alternatives, ultimately, when you only vote for your best alternative, we all lose. That's the, I think that's the point I'm trying to make. Thank you.
Further discussion. Question being called for. The question is on third reading amendment number 36. Would the chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson?
No.
Allman?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Vecht?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Job?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
No.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Mockler?
Aye.
Mockler?
Aye.
Nicholas? Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
No.
Basie?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Schiffer?
No.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 19 ayes, 11 noes.
Third reading amendment number 36 has passed the Senate. Senate File 1. Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Would the chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson?
Aye.
Allman?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Vecht?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert? Hines,
aye.
Jennings,
aye.
Job,
no.
Job,
no.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Larson,
no.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Mockler,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Scott,
no.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
aye.
Basie, Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Schiffer?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 26 ayes, 4 noes.
Senate File 1, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate. Senate File 1 has passed the Senate. Members of the Senate, I'd like to take just a moment to thank the Appropriations Committee. They put in a lot of hard work. I think they brought in a very good budget. We always change and tweak and work with budgets as they go through, but I commend that committee for their hard work in both November and December and January. I think they brought you a product that was good to work with. I think they presented it fairly. I think they tried to answer any and all questions, and that's about as good as you can do on appropriations, even if nobody else likes you. Thank you, committee. We appreciate it. Job.
Mr. President, I think a big thanks also goes to our LSO staff. They were here very late and handled all the stress and all the requests that we gave them with a lot of grace and dignity, and I think we ought to thank them as well.
Thank you, LSO staff. We do appreciate it very much. What have you got for me? Messages from the House? Okay. Messages from the House.
February the 22nd, 2008, from the House of Representatives, Message 151, third reading, passed, amended. Mr. President, the budget bill listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. In accordance with Joint Rule 14-1, the bill is not engrossed and the adopted House amendments are being transmitted with the bill. House Bill Number 1, General Government Appropriations 2, Ayes 48, Noes 8, excused 4. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
February the 22nd, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 55, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Geis, Johnson, Perkins, and Vasey, Senator Geis, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk here.
Mr. President, before I make a motion, I want to let all the senators know that with the House bills in committee of the whole, I don't always have any idea who will be handling them on the floor. So I may not be checking with you, and if your bill, the one you're handling, go up on the board and you're not ready, please contact me and we'll move it to a better time. With that, Mr. President, I move that the Senate be adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday morning, February 25th.
Senator Cole.
Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, will meet Monday morning at 8 o'clock to continue discussion on House Bill 36, Engrossed Uniform Law and Notarial Acts, and House Bill 17, Engrossed Community College Commission Duties.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Monday morning at 8 a.m. House Bill 38, Medicaid Provider Reimbursements.
Mr. Vice President.
Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, will meet Tuesday, February 26th, 20 minutes after the lunch hour, or after the lunch break, in Senate 16 go over House Bill 54, Natural Gas Valuation, House Bill 91, Streamlined Gas or Streamlined Sales and Use Tax, House Bill 33, Engrossed Veterans Property Tax Exemption.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet Monday morning at 8 a.m. in room 302 to continue our work on House Bill 89, Engrossed Ownership of Subsurface Pore Space, and House Bill 30, Modernization of Court Procedures.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet Monday, 20 minutes after the noon recess, in S-18 to discuss House Bill 48, Engrossed State Loan and Investment Board Loans.
Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet after adjournment Monday in S-14 to take up House Bill 22, Failure to Observe Road Closure, and House Bill 78, County Road Fund.
Further announcements. The motion is that the Senate shall be in recess until 10 a.m. Monday morning. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The Senate is recessed till 10 a.m.